and welcome to episode 187 of the Awesome Comics Podcast. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And as always, I'm joined by both of my co-hosts, one of which is the creator of webcomic Vanguard, Mr. Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And Mr. Lover Lover himself. No, it's not Shaggy. And by I don't mean the Scooby-Doo Shaggy. Well, I guess he's kind of our Shaggy, isn't he, Dan?
Yeah.
It's Tony Esmond.
I'm willing to make a bet that Shaggy from Scooby-Doo got more tail than Shaggy the Rapper, because Shaggy the Rapper was like proper sleazebag, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, but did Shaggy from Scooby-Doo have any game?
I bet he did.
I reckon so. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got that hipster vibe, isn't he?
But do you think he's one of those... Stuff. Yeah, because what's their ages in Scooby-Doo? They're in their teens, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do you think? Yeah, he always looked older, didn't he? He looked like a bit like an old man to me, Shaggy.
Yeah. Sometimes. It's a little bit uncomfortable, isn't it? I mean, if he is supposed to be a teenager, do you think he's one of those people that blossomed into like a Ryan Reynolds-like hunk when he was older? Yeah.
Could well be. Is this you segueing into your Shaggy fan fiction?
Yeah, Shaggy Ryan Reynolds fan fiction. Yeah.
Well, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Remember that time Ryan Reynolds was halfway up me and Shaggy walked in naked in the shower?
He was halfway up me?
Yeah.
Oh. I tell you what, there's James Joyce and then there's you, isn't there? Bloody exactly. Poets.
I'm actually a big James Joyce fan. Let's do a James Joyce podcast.
The Joyce
I've
cast.
Got nothing to say, yeah. I've got nothing to say on that matter.
Me neither.
I mean, he had a few dark issues, Joyce.
Don't we all?
Read the last 50 pages of Ulysses. That's better than Knave magazine. Do it now.
And I tell you what, that's the most literate this show has been in quite some time. Yeah. Coming from Tony Esmond, no doubt.
Good feedback from the last episode.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much.
He was good.
Yes, thank you very much again to Tom from That Comic Smell for last week's episode. We thoroughly enjoyed it. We're all beaming once we finish recording.
Yeah.
Me partly because it actually recorded.
Yeah.
But no, is it
we got it on the air.
Yeah. It was a year last year around this time that the incident happened.
The incident.
Was he really a year ago?
It's about a year. The Facebook thing came up and said, like, mentioned it, and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, it was about a year ago.
Yeah, it was when lovely Iz McAuliffe joined us for an evening to interview us.
We all love Iz.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it didn't record.
Lost the whole fucking thing.
We'll have just met Iz.
Yeah, we will have, because
we
have just been at True Believers Comic Festival 2019. Yes, con season has kicked off properly. It's all kicked off. It's all kicking off on the Awesome Pod. This week it's going to be a bit short, sharp and sexy from us in the studio, as it were. I've never called it a studio before, have I? It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Sounds good.
It does sound good, in theory.
It does, I feel like we're on, Screen Test or Aspel or something like that.
Aspel? Bloody hell. Yeah. That's a blast from the past. But yes, because we're True Believers... this past weekend, as we're speaking, and we're not going to say we had a great time, because I think that much is obvious. But
well, to be honest, we don't know yet, do we?
We
might have had a big tear up.
Yeah, I can't be bothered to talk in the past tense. But what we do have for you is some audio from the day. So that's coming up in a minute, because otherwise we just get really confused, don't we? We definitely have some.
We always say we're going to have some, and then we never do sometimes.
Yeah,
but True Believers, we've always managed to get some decent audio.
We put the pressure on, didn't we, to get some, because we'd give it the big one on this bit, saying we're going to have some audio.
Yeah, that's good, it'll make us do it, won't it?
Yeah, yeah, true. And if we don't, then I'll just record like half an hour by myself. Just
you can do that. Oh, I've just woken up, I'm in bed. Yeah. Shh, be quiet.
I don't.
But you can say that, can't you?
Yeah. Well, that's spoiling it for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, if that episode ever appears, who knows? But anyway, so in a minute you're going to hear some audio from the day. A day we're hugely excited about. But you already know about that if you've been listening to us anyway. So we're not going to talk about it anymore, you know. We'd be marketing machines, but it's done now. we're done.
If you can't pick up any comics at the convention, there's always another way to read great comics.
Yeah, how can you read? How can you read great comics, Dan?
Go to comichouse.com.
Oh, Comic House. What, you mean our sponsor?
Yeah. That's the ones.
We don't know because he will have finally met all three of us on the weekend and we'll have thoroughly disgraced ourselves. So there's a fucking very good chance he isn't now our sponsor.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to say, Pete, we're sorry.
Sorry. I apologise when I saw him.
Cut free from Comic House, the subscription, the slot will be open. So in touch.
Yeah. So we buy any car, or I can't believe it's not butter. Please contact us.
Why are they your two choices?
Oh, they're cheesy, shite ones, aren't they?
What's the most important things to Tony? Cars and butter.
Put the two together.
It was more corgi covered in butter. Slipped straight up my anus.
Oh,
do you want to hear about some of the featured print indie comics for sale on Comic
Yes, please, Dad. Yeah. Please.
There's Whiz Bang and Amelia, Journey to the Center of the Underbed, Cruel Part 1, Megatomic Battle Rabbit 2, City of Lost Souls Volume 1, Part 6, The Awesome Comic Volume 1, Part 3. 4 will be up there at some point soon. Anxiety Me.
Three's not on there yet. You mean 2?
No, but this is to buy. This
Death
of Watson Tower, The Needleman, Awesome Comics 2, and Awesome Comics 1.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes. As you can tell, we put our comics on Comic House, so it's not like we're just shamelessly plugging them, just taking all their money for no reason. We actually use them, and we love them. And they're a great way to get your hands on great indie books. Mm. And also, if you self-publish your own comics, you can list your book on there for free to sell. Like all those great titles there, and they only take 1 pence commission, so that's amazing. They've also got an app which is brilliant, and I've been using this week, and we use quite a lot actually, really, don't we?
I use it this week too.
Yeah. There's always regular updates, and it's subscription, and for only £3 a month, you get access to their huge library of digital indie comics, which is growing all the time, which is amazing. I mean, you go to the browse section, you'll be lost for days, seriously. So, and plus that's less than just your average comic. I mean, bloody hell, it's less than your average digital comic almost these days, but that's another topic entirely for another day. So if you want to find out more about this great service, start a 14-day free trial, and to dive headfirst into the amazing world of indie comics that we talk about every week, and we have done for God knows how many weeks, then definitely go to comichouse.com.
187
weeks. 187. Oh, you know what that is.
What does that mean?
Murder, death, kill.
Murder, yeah.
Is that what it is? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what they say on Demolition Man. Classic.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. anyway, from murder to this week's show. Now, before we do the audio, Tony, you want to talk a little bit about art, don't you? Let's do a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to talk about it a bit because I've noticed some sort of changes in the art world, and I know you have as well, Dan. I know you just mentioned it, but the... I've noticed that the price of commissions has shot up amongst comics professionals. I think that's definitely happened.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that it seems to be just increasing, but it's, I put this on Twitter this week and a lot of people agree with me, is I'm beginning to find it a lottery of requesting a commission from a professional, and it's a bit of a lottery as to whether I ever get it.
Oh, really? I'm sure you post something about this.
Yeah. I'm 2009 is my oldest one. I yearly send this guy a message. I'm going to say his name is something similar to Bass and Jurrows. Let's just say it's similar to that. In 2009, I paid him for a commission.
Which can't have been cheap, I'm sure.
Well, it wasn't an expensive one. It was like a blank cover one, you know, from an Avatar book. He was at the Avatar table, so I never got that. And sort of every so often I'll message him about it. And he stopped replying now. He started off replying by, oh, perhaps you should contact Avatar. And I'm thinking, why? I paid you for a commission. Do you know what I mean? I've had another one recently, which is quite a few months into, which is actually going to be a present for my son. And it is now, double figures weeks. And the geezer's nowhere near sending it. And that's only a print.
Really?
Yeah. So that's already done.
And that's paid for. That weren't a cheap print, and the shipping was doubled the cost almost, you know?
That's really bad.
And I'm beginning to wonder whether there are a few, not all, but a few comic professionals out there who see us, at the fan with a small amount of disposable income, as a bit of a cash cow. I literally have lost count of the number of professionals who flaked or never replied after I've, you know, requested numerous times of, you know, how's that commission coming on? Yeah, can I meet you at the convention? I've actually had just professionals who've just cancelled a period at conventions, and I've never seen the artwork, you know.
Yeah,
that's fucked, man.
And I know we kind of take it on the chin. Oh, you know, I've heard a story that Sinkovich has had someone's sketchbook for like 6 years or something, and they're waiting for him to draw in it. And I'm thinking, what is the point of having this sketchbook full of art if you can't actually look at it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know it's
probably
going to be amazing.
He probably doesn't even know where that is anyway.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And I just wonder whether prices are going down for pages, possibly, because sales are going down. And there's been a couple of posts and a couple of web reveals recently of the actual page costs, you know, the page prices that people are getting paid for art-wise. And I think it's not a lot of money. And a lot of these commissions, I'm paying more than they're getting for the page rate, and I'm not getting a panelled page. You know?
It's messed up.
It's a funny one, isn't it? And I just think we need to be careful that we're not just, you know, this is not the last gasp of the comic, you know, the comics world, you know, where we're just being taken to the cleaners constantly.
Yeah. Just kind of quickly bleed it out while it's dying and getting as much as you can from it.
Yeah.
I feel really bad when I hear about stories like that, Tony, about people losing their commissions. It's only like last year someone posted up that they got done out of a commission, and I did one for them just for like to make up for it. I just couldn't. The idea of people getting rid of that really bugs me.
And it's not everyone. There's a lot of great creators out there. But I'm really gun shy of dealing directly with the creator sometimes, because especially when there's someone I've really looked up to, you know, over the years, and then you don't see anything, and then they make excuses, then they go radio silent on you, and you think, you know, I was invested in your artwork. I've probably spent hundreds, if not thousands, on occasion of pounds on stuff that you've done.
It's all fucking now.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit. And then there's the whole Brigade thing, isn't there, by that guy called, is it something similar to Lob Reifeld?
You sent me that imagery today, and I just can't fucking believe it. It's awful. I mean,
who is he kidding?
I don't know. There's people in the small press that we know that could just blow that guy out of the water.
Yeah.
And I'm not fucking being jealous or any of that shit. It's just incredulous. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Well, there's the whole Brigade thing, isn't he? He kickstarted Brigade.
Yeah.
You know the Brigade story, don't you?
He kickstarted it and then didn't come through.
He got like what, 30 grand or something, was it? I can't remember now. Something outrageous. And then he went and Indiegogo'd the same project.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Without having made it. And he kickstarted it in 2013.
There are, I think, and it's funny you should say Kickstarter, because I've thought about this in the past. I mean, you're talking about commissions. And how some professionals are unprofessional when it comes to commissions.
Not all of them. There's a lot of good
questions. God. I see ones posted on Twitter, like people are, you know, receiving commissions, or the artist has posted it up and about to send it off. And I love looking at commission work online.
Yeah.
You know, because there are so many brilliant. I mean, they're professionals for a reason, because they absolutely smash it.
Yeah, I got two Hardmans. I've got two Gabriel Hardmans in front of me here. And that's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's how you do it, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be great if there was a kind of portal you could go through to get commissions off people, and it tracked them, so you could look at people and said, well, that person hasn't delivered the last fucking five bits of commission work, so why am I going to hire him?
I mean, but you also, I find that there is a bleed through in that sort of unprofessionalism to some Kickstarters as well. I've heard more stories of people that are working for bigger companies, and you know, or even some like the bigger indie companies and stuff, you know, that like they're always like self-publishing title, they're working constantly, and yet they do a Kickstarter and then don't deliver on it, or you know, people are waiting on it. And you know, to be in this community that we know, you know, the indie community, which we've been lucky enough to get to know a lot of these people, we know so many people that are just absolutely smashing it with their Kickstarter campaigns, you know. And these people don't have oodles of time on their hands. These people have, you know, full-time jobs and stuff like that. And they're being realistic and they're smashing it. Yet you get some of these bigger artists and they do these Kickstarter campaigns, and you look at it and you think, my God, that looks like a beautiful book. You know, maybe 2 years ago I would have thought, that's a beautiful book. I've got to pledge on it. I won't do it now. Because you hear more, more stories of people. I mean, I am being let down currently by one of my favorite artists of all time.
Right.
You know, and that's a Kickstarter that I have pledged the most I've ever pledged on a Kickstarter to it because it was him.
Yeah.
Was that the body bags dude?
Yeah. Yeah. And it breaks my heart because I still love the art. I'll always love the art, but it's now at the point where there's no communication. There's no. Do you know what I mean? You know, I'm almost. If I hadn't spoken about it now, I probably wouldn't have thought about it for months. Do you know what I mean? And then months turned into almost a year, etc. And I've heard similar stories about other campaigns by some of these big creators.
Yeah.
And then when you hear stories like that, where you know they get a successful Kickstarter. And then they don't deliver, and then they take it to another platform and do exactly the same thing. That's just.
Or they just go and work for another company.
Yeah, you know that's what I mean? Just wrong. So and then
they pocket 60 grand, and then they just head off and work for a company and don't do it. You know, you think what?
Yeah, and then for instance, like obviously, like Rob Liefeld's work is going to be all over the shop now because of this. You know, Rob Liefeld's going back to the X-Men with that. I got to say it. It's a hideous design.
Yeah,
just, and the artwork.
Does he not know that mask was done years ago?
You know the first picture they released of that character? Do you remember when they announced it?
Yeah.
That is absolutely full of inaccuracies. It shouldn't.
Right.
And when you think, like Dan said, there are so many artists that will absolutely smash it. And then you get someone that's pretty much. I'm not going to say half-arsing because he's a passionate... Rob Liefeld is a passionate guy.
He's probably trying hard with that, isn't he?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
How much have they paid him?
That fucking picture is awful. Like, the guns are like blocks.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the colourist kind of going in and trying to make him have a bit of volume...
Yes.
And the Wolverine is just absolutely god-awful. I mean,
I don't know what's happened to Wolverine's chin in that.
For those who don't know, there's an image of, I think it's Agent X is the new one, isn't it? Well, that's a good name, isn't it? Agent X, Cable and Wolverine. So, you know, you're playing to the cheap seats, aren't you,
What kind of fucking cover is that? There's just three people standing stock straight, one after the other.
I know.
You can see better covers than that if you went on Comixology than New Comics.
Yeah. And I'll say this. I have... It's not necessarily a Liefeld thing because I have. It's an easy go to sort of say, oh, look at all the pouches or, you know, this image book or whatever this. I have hugely fond memories of reading X-Force and New Mutants and stuff. I absolutely love reading those books. And like that's not him, you know. But now when I see those stuff, it's almost like the modern colouring and stuff really highlights.
That's true.
It just seems how lazy it is, and I hate saying that. This is a show where we try to be as positive as possible.
Yeah. But I said this on a previous show, the man hasn't improved his craft in like 20 odd years.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's still... I guess it's been a bit nasty, but like, there's so many people that are turning out such great artwork, and I don't know why you keep going back to this guy.
Yeah.
I really don't.
It's the nostalgia sale, isn't it? That's what you're after. Completely.
But also the difference is, I think... Jim Lee sometimes gets criticism because people will say, well, he hasn't evolved his style. Well, it's Jim Lee's style. He doesn't have to evolve his style. But there are times when I see his pencils and I see his pages for the DC stuff, and there's so much detail and there's so much work that's gone into it. I'm like, this is not a man who's shortchanging what he's doing.
No.
He's, you know, if you don't like his style, that's one thing. But like,
I'd fucking sell my soul to draw as well as Jim Lee. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Back to the original topic, though, like the commissions. It's heartbreaking when you see
it was brought to my attention. I mean, I should have realised before, but Jason Wood posted about it, you know, and it's and suddenly I realised, they are all up in their commission rates. Do you know what? That's the thing. Okay, maybe they need to make the money. Okay, I kind of accept that, and art is what you'll pay for it. But what then becomes a stumbling block is so many of these fucking useless twats can't be bothered to actually do it and send it on.
Nah. I mean, I've seen loads of stuff.
That galls me.
Yeah.
On Twitter, someone's sort of like sticking their oar in saying this and that. And someone say, well, hold on, you fucking done a Kickstarter 2 years ago and you haven't delivered on that.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you haven't done that, they've got you every time as far as
I'm
concerned.
People got long memories now, haven't they?
Yeah, good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys wouldn't forget the guys who have burnt you on Kickstarter or have not done commissions for you.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm sure it'll stay with you. I must be touch wood, I haven't been done like that yet.
Fortunately, I've had the product, but there's two that I sort of follow. That's one's 2011, one's 2014, and they're still like shamelessly pumping it out. You know, you'd think butter wouldn't melt in their mouth with the political fucking statements they make about the poor fucking people who have been done out of money and stuff. And you think that's you?
Yeah,
yeah,
you're the fucking villain here, mate.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Or Mates. Yeah,
and this Mates, I like that.
Thank you.
And talking about this comes very shortly after, you know, I actually jumped into the commission game, got an absolute cheap commission from Alfie Gallagher. In the same day I ordered it, he smashed it, and I received it pretty much the next day. And that's like on Instagram and stuff. That's got so, since I posted it, that's got some of the most comments and likes that I've had on Instagram.
I genuinely think that the reason being that small press guys do it so quickly, so well, and on time and good product is because they are passionate about comics.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these comic professionals, they're a bit long in the tooth. They see all those fucking overweight, underweight, spotty-faced fucking fans at conventions. They think, I'll make a few quid here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't really care enough about it.
Do you think there's anything to be said? I mean, this is just a theory now. Do you think there's anything to be said that some of the professionals, and I don't have any particular ones pointed out here, some of them have gone straight, you know, they're obviously hugely talented, so they've gone straight into being like, you know, bigger names or part of the corporate machine, as it were, or like one of the big guns or etc. So they've never had, you know, the time in the trenches.
Yeah, maybe.
Playing in the dingy pubs. They've never sort of grasped.
Oh, I mean, the trenches are a much longer process now, aren't they? Because you can just stay here forever. You know, Liefeld got picked up on one of his first ever times an editor looked at his book. He hadn't really, I don't think he'd done a small press book, had he? He'd done nothing like that before. He just jumped straight into Marvel. There's, because he hit it at the right time, that sort of golden time. But I think there's
there is a way, that is not underselling this, there's a way to work with the bigger companies. You have to adapt and develop your style to work with these bigger companies. You know, it's not like you can work in the small press and then go to work for Marvel and it's exactly the same method. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And that's why you see, you know, some people get a lot of criticism for their art. You know, Greg Land, an easy one for people to criticise, but how regular is he? You know, no matter, I mean, I'm not a fan of his art, but there's a reason he's on so many books. There's a reason he's doing all of these titles, because he's giving them exactly what they want.
Yeah, and, you can turn in the work.
He's dependable, you know. And
I think sometimes you turn these stones over and you see things like the Liefeld Kickstarter or Peter David saying, oh, I forgot to pay my tax bill. Can you all send me money? You know, and it kind of just irks me that we're just seen as a wallet for them to open when they fancy it sometimes.
A bit more of a kind of one that's a bit more kind of raw is the Mark Waid asking for people to pay his legal
pay his legal bills.
It's like, well,
both sides in that are not completely right, people.
If you want to start fighting a war and it fucking starts taking its toll, do you go off and start saying, I'll give you money now because I think I fucked up? Personally, I don't think you should be doing that. But if you ain't got the money to pay it, that's on you, I guess.
Yeah.
But like the Peter David thing with I forgot to pay my tax bill.
And saying it in front of a piece of original art that would have probably paid a big chunk of that tax bill, you know, on a video. You're like, really, Peter? Really?
Yeah.
So, oh well, that's like a little bit of a bleat over with.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's get back to being positive.
I
saw a piece of original art today by a friend of ours. I don't think you two have seen it, and I've just sent him an all capitals message, which he replied saying, "Thanks for all the capitals, because it's fucking excellent." And I know who it's going to, and I'm not saying who it is, because I know you two have fucking planned something, and I'm getting paranoid.
Why are you saying that?
Yeah, look at you two. You couldn't lie your way out of a fucking fish and chip paper. Listen, come on, I'm a master of lying, and you two are fucking rubbish at it. I've spotted it straight away.
Well, folks.
Look at my mind games. Let's play mind games.
He's actually going to make me believe that I have planned something. That's what it is. That's how good his mind games are. I'll be seeing Dan, talking to Dan next, and going, what did we do?
You'll be sitting there thinking, why am I in my pants in his room? How did he talk me
to the ball gagging.
Yeah. How did he do this again?
Tony levering the shit out of you with a bit of garden hose.
Well, have you been to the garden centre, yeah. Tony? Of course, shut up.
Did we actually get up to that this weekend? I guess they'll have to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. By witnessing it. Oh, yeah. No, we can't do that. No. It's gone past.
No. But you can bear witness to what happened at True Believers.
Oh,
this
nice.
Weekend.
That was class.
Because I think this is the perfect point. You know, after having, we had a little bit of a grumpy old man session there.
Yeah, we did. So that, yeah. Sorry about that.
Let's bring the mood up with some fantastic conversation with brilliant creators and probably a lot of fun. And no doubt a lot of us laughing at just nonsensical stuff. God knows what will be over the next hour or so. So, yeah, here is our audio from the shop floor and maybe more of True Believers 2019. So, as we were saying before this, we are at True Believers 2019.
Hello.
Yeah. We're all here. The doors have just opened, so you can probably hear how busy it is as people are flowing through.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by loads of brilliant creators. We've already had plenty of chats already with some of them. So hopefully we're going to get plenty of interviews today, aren't we? What are you looking forward to, Tony?
Well, I've already shot my load, haven't I?
Yeah.
Because I managed to get a whole box of old British comics for 30 quid.
Eagles, no less.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
In order.
Yeah. It was all right.
Yeah,
I ran amazing. Out like a child.
They were in a whiskey box as well, so we thought you came back with like a load of whiskey.
Well, other than that, we had a... Because you didn't make last night, but we had a giggle because of the snow.
Yeah.
And we had a giggle last night, and then Dan turned up, caused a bit of a storm, dressed as his character.
Yes.
You see photos of it on the social media.
On the social media, yeah. Well, obviously, when this episode goes live, we'll put a few pictures alongside it. But Dan Butcher is dressed as Viper, and he's pretty much just made my year.
I mean, I'm bringing in the sales. I haven't done it yet.
We haven't had any yet.
He's bringing in the sales. He's bringing in the sex. He'll probably be bringing in,
writing a comic called Dan's Helmet.
Yeah. And we've already had a story about an elephant man type shenanigan.
I just want to be a gentleman.
And the pork tomahawk.
Yeah. Insider.
So, and the day has only just started. Yeah. So hopefully over the next bit of time, you're going to hear some great interviews with some creators we know and love, and hopefully some new voices. And then we'll probably do one at the end where we're all knackered. Dan's probably sweated 12 pounds of water for his body.
And his anus.
Yeah, that's true. With that, let's carry on. Okay, now we mentioned this name every week on the show. But I'm here with Pete from Comic House.
Hello.
Oh, look at that smooth voice.
Not as smooth as Dan.
No one can be as smooth as Dan.
I was trying, I was going for that.
Yeah.
Just trying to be Dan. Because he's left us for a moment, hasn't he? He's gone for a little wander.
Yes, he has. I think he's popped to get a sandwich. Oh, okay. But anyway, no one wants to know what's behind the curtain. It's nice. This is my first time, I think, seeing the Comic House at a convention, like the printed books and at the stand and stuff. How do you find... Because obviously a lot of people talk about the digital app. And that's obviously, you're pushing that, and we love it and we read it and stuff. But you've got this like library of printed books as well.
Yes.
And how do you find that side of Comic House, like when you're at conventions and stuff?
I think for me, the app was always something to discover your next great indie comic on.
Yeah.
And I think, I'd like to think people are using it for that, so they can read comics digitally and then go and find the print version and buy it. So, I mean, I love print copies.
Yeah.
I love to hold it in my hand, same as everyone else. Music, I love the vinyl. But I still like to listen to things on Spotify and try things out. So it's that same sort of thing where people can use the app and hopefully go on to buy not just our comics, but the awesome comics and the Vanguards and everything else that's in print. So
I think
in some ways, there's a bit of a myth that people that read digital will only read digital. And I think for some of the sort of like fly-by-night sort of readers that are just dipping their toe in, that may be true. But for most comic fans, I would say there's a lot of double dipping going on, isn't
there? Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's the way that people are going to continue to find comics.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff out there. People can't go to all the cons. They can't go to the shops. They can't... And you can't really buy online without knowing first what the book's about. So I think the digital side of things is going to be... It's going to be a great tool and a great promotional exercise for everyone to get their books out there a bit more and get them to a new audience, perhaps. So that's what we're trying to do anyway. I think things like this are important for us to kind of show a profile and a face and stuff like that and introduce to people to the fact that we are actually... putting out comic books
as well.
You're
a publisher as well.
Yeah,
you're totally a publisher as well.
I mean, we've got Lizard Men here, we've got 32 Kills, we've got Close, and all the 11 issues of the Comic House anthology. And I think both our tables look bloody lovely.
Oh, yeah, they're gorgeous. It's the sexy corner.
It's the sexy corner. And we've got a great place here. As soon as you come in the doors, we're right there in people's faces.
That's where you want to be. obviously, with the anthology... You know, you've put out how many issues is that now?
There's 11 issues now.
11 issues.
11. We've slowed it down just for my own mental kind of sanity and stuff because it was getting a lot. The anthology was originally done so we could showcase new creators. And I'd like to think the app's an extension of that where we can actually just distribute other people's comics.
But then
digitally,
you stepped into like the original, you know, extra original content, like one-shots, like Close and 32 Kills and like, stuff like that. What made you start... Because you were already... How many issues of the anthology had you had before you did, like, a one-shot like that?
We were up to issue 10. I made a decision at issue 10 not to carry on doing it sequentially. I think there's a lot for people to buy into when you're doing it, so many as we were. They come to your table and you say, it's a sequential indie 2000 AD, if you like.
Yeah.
And they've got to buy issue one right the way through.
Yeah.
It's a lot for people
to take on.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Especially where do you start?
So I thought the from issue 11 onwards, it's a complete book. There's all just one shots in there, and I think it's a lot more easy. It's a lot more palatable, and it's a lot easier for people on a budget, especially when there's so much great stuff here that people want to buy. They've only got a finite amount of money. Let's make it easier for them and just have one book that's complete. And if they like it, they can still buy the next book and discover the rest of the stories and things. But for me, it was. We wanted to branch out and give people a more complete experience in a book sort of thing. So, I mean, the 32 Kills and Close and Lizard Men, I just had to put them out. They're just great books.
How did that come about? Because obviously we know the creators of those books, but it was interesting that it came out through Comic House. So how did those discussions start?
With 32 Kills, Mike and Andy just came to me and said, look, we really like what you're doing. I love what they were doing, and we thought it'd be a mutual... thing to work together. We wanted to work together, so they came to us with a suggestion, and we read the book and we thought it'd be daft, it's a home run. We just wanted to put it out. We wanted to be associated with it. I mean, from our point of view, it's more profile for Comic House because it just spreads the word farther. And for me, it was a no-brainer. The Close thing again, Chris Sides came to me and Christopher. We were going to feature that. We'd already penciled them in for the Comic House anthology to have the Close series running issue 12, 13, 14, 15. But I went to Chris and said, look, how about I stop doing it sequentially in an anthology and we just do the Close as a one-shot? And him and Chris were happy with that.
I mean,
so
with that story as well, it's got so much more impact reading it in one.
In one hit, I agree, totally agree. And it just means that you've got the whole package there in one book, and it just made sense for us to do it that way as well. There's quite a few other stories which we were going to have in Comic House Anthology as sequentials, which we are going to finish up as collecting trades. I mean, the chalk has got Steve Horry's chalk with Katia and Ken doing the letters and Chiara doing the colours. That they've got a whole another six issues to do that, so we're going to bundle all that together with the first six part and put it out in a trade.
Brilliant.
So.
Brilliant.
It's just making it easier for the punter, really, I guess. And so it's less work for me. Because it's just...
As soon as you start in comics, you think, oh, my God, this is so much work.
I know, exactly. Yeah. I mean, for me, I thought, hey, you're doing an indie monthly. How young could that be? Do you know what I mean? But I was finding that as soon as we were putting it out, I was having to start work on the next one. And we've all got day jobs. We've all got stuff to do, families and things. And I thought, it's going to be a lot easier if I just slow it down and really...
It's quality then over quantity.
Exactly. So I'm really proud with what we've done so far with the whole anthology run, and we've been really lucky with the covers and all the artists and creators that have been involved in it. We've just been really lucky, yeah. So I want to keep that going, but maybe just release two or three a year, yeah, as they come in as complete sets.
So are there going to be any more books like Close or 32 Kills on the horizon? Do you have a palette? Not that you can announce now. But
no, we can't announce, but we have got a schedule for the rest of the year.
Oh, nice.
And we're going to be doing some collected trades from the issues of Comic House as well, which I'm quite looking forward to doing. And yeah, there's a whole schedule thing.
So 2019 is going to be quite a...
It's going to be quite a busy year.
An exciting year.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I'm going to spend the rest of the year just...
Getting over today.
Yeah. And just with the app, it's just constantly trying to... It's a bit of a catch-22 thing with the app. You need the content there.
Yeah.
And you obviously need the readers there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and the readers aren't going to come without one, and the other needs the readers and all that sort of thing. So we're just busy building it up. But luckily, it's got a little momentum of its own, I think, which is great. And it keeps building, and people keep adding stuff to it. And I think it's important that we try to have... I think we were talking about this earlier. A lot of indie publishers want to, I think, create their own apps, which I can understand. They've got their own content, they've created their own apps, but it will mean that
there's... It's a different world, though, the app world, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's going to be 10 or 12 or 15 apps that you subscribe to, all with different content, and we want to be more of a kind of a Spotify or a kind of a Netflix in that respect, where everything's on there.
A go-to place for...
Exactly. And I think that's something I'm going to strive towards, in just getting as much content on there as possible. So.
I mean, I know you, like, very kindly sponsor our show and stuff, but we wouldn't have you as a sponsor if we didn't genuinely believe in it.
No, I'd like to think that. I'm really pleased you... I mean, I came to you and said, how about this? And I'm very pleased that you guys liked what we were doing and took us on board, because I'm the same as you. I wouldn't want to endorse anything that...
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. That was dog shit.
And you put up with our terrible ads. Yeah. So for those people listening, like, where can they go to find out more? Because whenever I say it every week... They probably don't even listen to that.
Won't listen to this either.
No,
but they probably won't listen to me giving you a link now. But comichouse.com is where you can find out everything about the comic, the app, and everything else we're doing, all the other madness we're doing.
Brilliant.
So, and I just want to thank you guys as well for the support you've given us. Because, as you said, you didn't have to, Guy, say to us, yes, we'll work with you. Because it's...
Well, it's a pleasure, Dave.
Oh, thank you very much for having us. That's a big love,
and you're very handsome.
Oh, you too. It's lovely.
Right, I'm here with Andy from Horde Comics.
Wow.
I've seen you blossom from someone I always see at conventions to now being a publisher.
Legit now.
Yeah, legit. You're on the other side of the table. How's that feel?
Really good, actually. It's really nice. Feel included. You've all been very welcoming. Thank you.
You make it sound pretty creepy when you put it like that. But, I mean, obviously it's been a hell of a year for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a crazy 12 months, slightly less than, actually. So we launched our first anthology at the summer variant of True Believers last year.
Yeah, that was like 6 months ago, if that.
Yeah, I mean, after the Kickstarter as well, which people were very, very kind about.
Best video ever, which doesn't bode well for your next Kickstarter campaign, because you've got to outdo it.
We've got something planned. That's why Greg isn't here, he's getting ready.
We're worried about you, Greg. Are you?
He's got to be match fit for this.
Yeah. So you've already got like a future Kickstarter plan.
Yeah. It's all coming together. The second anthology is under construction as we speak. We have a few artists to lock down, but other stories are already in production. So Greg is returning to do another couple of stories as well. Do you want a little exclusive while we're here?
Oh. Yes.
Your friend of mine, Russell Mark Olson, is going to join with us for one of the stories. You know, you said you were looking out for some more collaborations from him this year? There's one of them for you. So he is doing a fantasy-style story, the art for us, written by one of our friends, Matt Kinson, art by Russ. It's called Black Death.
Amazing. Oh, it's so nice to have an exclusive. We never get exclusives. But that sounds amazing, though. I mean, the first anthology was just a super impressive sort of straight out of the gate sort of collection, you know, across the board, like, just how professional the product was. I mean, what was the feeling like when you got it, the first book in your hand?
It's incredible. So when all those boxes arrived at the door, opening them up and actually having something after talking about it for so long, and hearing...
How long had you been sort of talking and throwing ideas about?
We first started talking about it conceptually years ago. Like, we talked about doing comics just for fun back when I was chatting to Greg while I was at uni. I am 35 now. So we used to chat about it instead of doing coursework. We used to throw out ideas. Oh, we could do this type of story, and then it started together working as Horde. Probably a year prior to it coming out, just chatting, getting some story ideas. We originally started. We were going to do a longer form story, and we were going to do some shorts just to put out as promotional material. But it kind of grew and turned into the anthology from there. As I say, people got on board with it, and now we're working on a second anthology. We've just brought out our first issue of a mini-series came out as well.
Now, this is where I was going to lead to, because obviously you came out with an anthology, and you could have been seen as, oh, it's one of those outfits that does anthologies, which we see a lot of, and they're, you know, always quality stuff. But then Revenant sort of appeared out of nowhere, obviously with a glorious cover by Andy Blore.
Which nice work.
Probably a few people have seen online. It's good. But tell us a bit more about that and actually how that came to be, because it's more than just a one-shot, isn't it? It's a bit of a series.
Yeah, so Revenant is a four-part mini-series. The first issue comes out today here at True Believers. It'll be online shortly. But it is set around the Ripper murders of the 1880s. Two characters who, as you might have heard Tony mention last week, not particularly likable or good guys in their own right, but forced to work together to deal with the bigger threat. So it's something that Tiff, who writes with us, it's his brainchild. He is big into history and context, so he's got so much back matter that's gone into this as well. So he's tried to set it around the actual events of the Ripper murders, but obviously with a supernatural fictional twist as well. And it's a story he's been wanting to tell for a long time, so we all got together, partnered with him just to convert to a comic format, give it a little.
Was this something that he had in mind long before you said, you should turn this into a comic series? Was it one of those?
I think when we first started about comic series, he's always had an interest in that area of history and lore, I suppose. And once we started working on comics, it was the first thing that he really wanted to push and do as a mini-series. But it's certainly a direction we're going to be moving in more in the future. So Revenant is the first of things. We are focused on getting the next anthology out now, but then you'll probably see more mini-series from the rest of us while we let the anthologies kind of self-sustain a little bit, because, you know, we can work with artists and writers
and
that want to do short stories.
Done, so they're sort of evergreen, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's no to be continued.
Yeah, we can always go with those ones and keep putting those things out, but then we wanted to be able to tell longer stories as well. So really wanted to diversify and actually give people time to let a story grow and build as go along as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Horde, most people probably know you and Greg from the Horde, but the Horde is more than just you two. There's a small group of you, isn't
there? There's the three of us that originally put it together. So myself, Greg, and Tiff, who writes under the name of David Killian. So there's the three of us that first started it all together, but effectively...
Which one's Batman, which one's Superman, and which one's Wonder Woman? You're clearly Wonder Woman.
Of course. But you can't see my cosplay over on an audio format, guys.
It's shocking. Yeah. I mean, it's why I've interviewed you now.
Yeah, thank you. But I would say Greg would fall out of me if he wasn't Batman.
Very diplomatic. Very diplomatic.
And he's probably, you've seen him, he's most likely to...
He'd break us in half.
Yeah. No one would ever find the body.
Yeah. I think we need to break that down off air.
But the three of us together, but then really, because especially with the, well, with everything, the mini-series and the anthologies, it's always a collaborative effort. So once you've done a book with us, you're part of the family. Really. And like, we've been so lucky with the people we've worked with. So Russell's on board for the new book. We've worked with Gav Mitchell before. People from all over the world as well.
It's keeping those sort of relationships positive as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're really thrilled to have Andy for the cover of the Revenant issue one. When's your time, mate?
Oh no,
you're already there. You're one of the pin-ups in the back of the first anthology.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
You're part of the gang and didn't even know it.
Everyone gets me eventually.
We're like so solid crew, basically. There's so many members.
There's 21 seconds to go.
Yeah, or Chumbawamba, whichever cultural reference applies more.
Definitely Chumbawamba, I think.
Right, we are the Chumbawamba of comic production, and you heard it here first.
Yeah. So where can people, obviously you launched Revenant here today, but where can people get it if like they're not a local con or shop?
If you're not finding it in your local comic shop, which we will be approaching various ones we know in the coming weeks, but it will be available shortly over on hordecomics.com, and then we'll start submitting it to all of the usual places. You know, we'll get it onto Comixology and so on as soon as we can. You know, timings are like with them sometimes, but pretty much immediately, once Tiff gets to sit down at his computer, we'll make it available digitally and physically as well, over on the hordecomics.com website, and then go from there, pick it up.
Yes, there you go. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
I'm here with Vic Idstar Hill. Is that right? How good am I? That's good, isn't it? I remembered all your names. I never remember anything. I don't remember his name. Tabling at True Believers for the second time?
First time,
is it? Okay. How have you found it?
It's been really nice. Everybody's really friendly. Really nice atmosphere. Right.
Have you spoke to Vince and Dan then?
Yeah, I mean, not yet, but, you know. It's good to get the interview done before that.
So what have you been selling today?
I've been selling my comics. I've got issues 1 and 2 of my Unchronicled comic series. I've been talking about another graphic novel project that I'm working on and kind of telling people about that, which is called Ivy in the Dark.
Totally self-published or?
Yes. Yes, totally self-published at this point. And if there's anybody out there who wants to change that, then they feel free. But also sending pictures of cats doing fun things.
Cats go down well, don't they?
Cats always go down well, especially cats with attitude.
My friend went to Bristol Zine Fair recently, and he saw someone was selling a print of a milk bottle.
Just a milk bottle.
Yeah. So I did a print of a Lenore bottle, because I think they're more interesting in shape. But cats are much better for selling, aren't they?
Cats are a pretty sort of solid bet, I think. That and Superhero. I got Deadpool and Harley and things like that as well.
Yeah, cool.
I've got a really random assortment of stuff on my table, actually, to be fair.
So tell us a bit about what your comic's about. So it's Chronicle, isn't it?
Yeah, Unchronicled is about... Unchronicled is about a guy called Roy who gets the chance to swap places with the hero of his favourite video game series and go on his own Lost City treasure hunting adventure, and he finds that it is a little bit harder than he probably imagined it to be, which is something I think we can all relate to.
There's a little bit of the Raiders in it, isn't there?
It's a little bit Raiders if you've ever played the Uncharted games.
I've never played a video game in my life.
It's kind of like a more modern day sort of parody take on that, really. Kind of vibe. Very much playing on the idea of going on this escapading adventure and how you kind of...
Did you stick that out online first? I can't remember now. Did it come straight out as a comic?
It's just straight out as a comic.
Have you mucked about with webcomics yet, or are you going to try that? Or
I actually did do a webcomic for like years and years. Oh, that's all right. It's very, very unknown. And I didn't really kind of... It sort of ground to a halt. It was more an exercise in developing my own art. It wasn't a storytelling one. It was a kind of like Joker Week kind of type thing called Button Press. But I've got more projects lined up for more webcomics, which are going to have like an actual narrative to them.
And what's the graphic novel going to be about?
The graphic novel is called Ivy in the Dark, and it is the story of a little girl called Ivy who is the unfortunate selection of her mountain village to be that year's sacrifice to appease the mountain gods. So they lower her down into the dark caves below their village to be devoured by a great beast, and it's about what she finds when she gets down there.
Yeah, so you kind of start almost some people might start with getting on the boat and going to the island or whatever it is, I like dropping into the action though. Yeah, I really like that.
Kids in peril, that's the message really.
And when's that out?
I'm working on that right now, so that hopefully should be out this year.
Okay, cool. And where can people find you, Vic? Where can people... firstly, I'd like to formally apologise for referring to you as Victor at one point on the podcast about a year ago, which you took extremely well, I might add.
I've been referred to as far worse. You can find me all over the internet, most places like Twitter and Facebook at Idstar, and also on Tumblr at Idstar. I have idstar.com, and I'm on Instagram as Vic Idstar because someone else had got Idstar before me, and I'm quite bitter about it.
I hate them.
Just how dare they?
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
It's all right.
Well, I'm here with the mighty, colourful Steve Tanner. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. First show of the 2019, The True Believers. It's a storm. It's brilliant.
It's a good one, isn't it? I mean, this does have one of those great sort of, I don't know about you, the classic comic conventions in a hotel, but the atmosphere is just so much...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know Stuart was, you know, he was a bit disappointed about not being at the race course this year. Yeah. But I think this is great. This is real. This feels like a real, more traditional con. Yeah. Everyone that needs to be here is here. Everyone's catching up.
A good atmosphere as well, isn't it?
It's great. Yeah. And the people have been great. Yeah. The people have been coming in. There's been a mixture of people who's been their first con ever because it's just down the road. Yeah. And also there's some, you know, familiar faces, and it's been great just catching up with people again.
All ages, been seeing loads of kids, some great cosplay and stuff. This is a good show, but how has it been for you? I mean, what have you got at the table today?
Oh, I've got the usual, all the gubbins that I already has. Last year, I've had a busy year last year. I had 4 new books out, so they're all at the table. So I've got the first 3 Flintlock books there. I've got a new horror anthology, Bomb Scares 2. I brought Defiant back out, which is the Viking Anglo-Saxon graphic novel written by Andy Winter and drawn by Daniel Bell and now Joseph Tomic. And that was a popular one last year. And at the moment, I've just started, opened up a Kickstarter for the first Flintlock spin-off, which is the Clockwork Cavalier Special.
Ah, nice. Now, Flintlock, as we've talked a bit about that on the show, and it's definitely a series I love. You got how many books of Flintlock at the moment?
I got 3 books out, and book 4 will be out later this year.
Have you kickstarted each one of those books?
Yes. Yes.
When I say kickstarted, you've normally got them done, and it's just print.
Well, the way I approach Kickstarter is kind of different from how maybe a lot of other people do them, because I approach it entirely as a pre-order. So I don't do like an all or nothing kind of target. The target I always have is quite a low one. And the reason is, what I like to do, the idea with the pre-order is it means that it's properly rewarding people who are good enough to kind of put their money down before the book comes out. So the way that they're designed is that it'll hopefully hit its target early, which means that I can then start putting stretch goals in. The stretch goals in add extra content to the different reward packages. So by the end of the campaign, every backer, effectively, they get the printed book for free because I've added so much content in. And that's my kind of business model for doing the Kickstarter.
Is this something you've learned over doing like several Kickstarters now?
You tweaked it
with each campaign?
Kind of. I mean, from the outset, it was always that kind of model, simply because for years I was anti-Kickstarter. And I kind of realised all of a sudden it wasn't the platform itself I had a problem with. It was how I'd seen some things being done. And really, I took a leaf out of the tabletop games section of Kickstarter, where, you know, a lot of the tabletop games that come out there, they add so much extra content in there. It becomes such a good value deal. And I thought, well, that would make sense to do that for a comic Kickstarter as well. So that's how I've approached it. And obviously, you refine it with each one. And what I've got now is my 8th Kickstarter. And none of them have been the same. They've all been slightly different. But I've always taken something away from each one. So there's been some fine-tuning there, but not a huge amount. The basic model is rewarding backers for their support.
You'll get the book as soon as the campaign's over.
Yeah. And you know, the price of the book that you get through the Kickstarter is cheaper than it will be anywhere else. Well, certainly from me at any other show I do. Because one of the things that I kind of also kind of like, I don't know, it bugs me a little bit, is when you see someone doing a Kickstarter, which is great, and maybe they're asking £15, including postage, for a 32-page comic, and then the minute it comes out, it's on their table for a fiver. And it's kind of like, no, reward backers properly, you know? Yeah, so that's what I try and do. So it seems to work, and it also helps with the Clockwork Cavalier book that I've got an audience for Flintlock already. So a lot of the regular backers of the Flintlock books have jumped on to the Clockwork Cavalier special.
So this is the Clockwork Cavalier is one of the stories within the Flintlock, because Flintlock is a couple of different stories, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the idea behind Flintlock, it's an anthology book, so it tells lots of different stories all set in the 18th century. With lots of different characters, but each of those characters' storylines is set in a different decade. So they're separate stories to each other, but running through it all is a shared timeline. So you can have a character from one story, and their story, say, set in 1720, and their story could then have an impact on another character's story that's set in 1780, even though the characters involved may never meet each other. Some characters do meet up, but there's also some kind of subtle references there as well. So if you kind of follow the series, you start to pick up all these little connections through the timeline. And there's certain kind of decades that I keep spare for because I've got things kind of planned in the future. And the Clockwork Cavalier special, he first met him in Flintlock Book 1 in the 1750s, and the special is set in 1770s London. So it's 20 years later. So it can be read as a standalone book, or if you followed the Clockwork Cavalier stories in Flintlock, you can kind of see the progression of the character.
So is this the first sort of one-shot sort of solo title, as it were, from that universe?
Yes, and it's also the first one in colour. So it's in full colour. The artwork's lovely. It's a guy called Francesco Arcidiacano. That's his name. I got his name right.
Well done. I murder all the names.
And he did all the line art, and it's been coloured by an artist called Ben Lopez. And between the two of them, they've done a brilliant job. And what they've done, they've done a real great job of bringing 1770s London to life. Because one of the challenges with a book like Flintlock, certainly for the artists, is getting the period right.
The reference isn't just at your beck and call, is it?
Yeah, that's right. But the thing is with the Clockwork Cavalier, because he is probably the most fantastical character of all the Flintlock cast, because basically he's a clockwork man. So although he's based on the real kind of character of the Turk from history, who was everyone thought he was a clockwork man that was playing chess, but it turned out to be an elaborate kind of hoax. But the idea with the Clockwork Cavalier is, what if there was a real clockwork man? And the Clockwork Cavalier, basically, he's been recruited into the Bow Street Runners, so he helps them fight crime in 18th century London. But because he's a bit fantastical, it means that with the special we can make that a bit more fantastical as well, and tell a story that may not...
Really taking the seatbelt off and just going.
Yeah, because, I mean, essentially the Clockwork Cavalier is a clockpunk character, which is a subgenre of steampunk, which is set... Steampunk is all set...
I've never heard of clockpunk.
If you're into steampunk, part of the steampunk community, you'll have heard of clockpunk. Yeah. But basically... steampunk is the Victorian era. Clockpunk is pre-Victorian, after the Middle Ages. If you go back to the Middle Ages, you have candlepunk. You can go all the way back to the Stone Age. You have stonepunk. Yeah. So there's all these kind of little derivatives. But the Clockwork Cavalier is very much clockpunk as the setting he's in. So it really is ramping up the clockpunk elements to it and making it a little bit fantastical, a little bit kind of, I guess, a bit widescreen, for want of a better word, as opposed to the kind of the regular title, which is probably a little bit more grounded in historical adventure.
Well, it sounds amazing. I mean, how long, obviously, the Kickstarter's going now.
Yes, it went live on... last Thursday just gone.
So has it got another month? Three weeks?
I think it was like a 30-day campaign, I think.
So from obviously this comes out on Monday, so we've got another good 3 weeks?
So we're not into the first week yet. So
I mean, so if they just search clockpunk, not... I'm gonna have that echoing in my head. What do they search on Kickstarter to find the campaign?
Clockwork Cavalier. Yeah, and it'll come up. There's various ways to search on Kickstarter. You can distill it down by...
Is it still under your Time Bum comics?
It's under my name, Steve Tanner.
Tanner.
Yeah.
And the Clockwork Cavalier.
And it's all set up. So, you know, you can get the digital version. You can get the printed version. Francesco has provided lots of pages of original art, including original comic pages.
Did you get Flintlock? Yes. Issues,
yeah,
as
yeah,
part of it,
yeah. What
if you want to catch up?
There's a bundle kind of pledge there, but there's also an add-on option. So if you've got a book or two of Flintlock before and you missed one, you can add that in as well. But really, it's about backers getting a really good comic, which hopefully they'll enjoy, at a really good price. With some extras in as well, and hopefully if the campaign goes, and I'm hoping it will, everyone, whether they back the digital or physical, will be getting something extra as part of that.
Awesome. Well, good luck with the campaign. So you're going to smash it. Come on, we know you will. and Flintlock's Ace, so you should read it. There you go.
Thank you, mate.
Me with John from Coglife Comics.
That's right.
Well, yeah. So you did it last year, didn't you? You did True Believers last year.
We did the summer variant last year. Yeah. So this is our first winter variant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah.
What have you got new out, John?
So we launched our second anthology, Survivor, at True Believers, not True Believers, at Earth or Bubble last year.
Right.
Yeah, so just plugging that, really.
Plugging away with that.
Yeah.
How's it gone?
Yeah, good. It's a step up from our first book, because, you know...
Tell us a bit about it. What sort of thing is it?
So it's a similar thing to what we were doing last with the first anthology, with Isolation. So we've taken the word Survivor and just seen what we could do with that word, like what kind of stories it generates, which has kind of lent it more towards horror. So mine's a ghost story, Mike's is a werewolf story.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And who has anyone else involved? Or
We've got our cover artist from Isolation on there, Deck. He's wrote and drew his first one.
Okay, cool.
Kind of popped his cherry with that.
Good.
Yeah.
So how long have you been going now? It's about a year and a bit, is it?
Yeah, about 2 years. Yeah, we started Thought Bubble 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
How are you finding it sort of... You're not a newbie, are you? But how are you finding the progression?
I feel like it.
Because it's sort of you're progressing now, aren't you? So you're becoming someone I recognise at conventions.
Yeah.
I recognise your books. You've got a product sort of in people's minds.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing? Or
yeah, just plugging away. And hopefully this year we want our own creator stuff. So have the anthologies as a base, and then from there launch our own kind of solo stuff.
What sort of thing have you got in mind?
Mike's got it. What did Mike want to do? Mike was talking about kind of a Universal Monsters kind of thing.
Okay.
Like not setting up a universe, but like a mini about serial killers and like the conspiracy theories that go along with that.
Okay.
I wanted to do an office based sci-fi.
Right, okay. That's a weird mix, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm always drawn to like the mundane, so.
Right. Okay. So like office space, but with more blasters and.
Yeah. Like basically, that. Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So you come down from Liverpool.
That's right.
You fucking boys, you drive miles for these things, don't you?
And it's always in the little mini. Mike's van's in the shop. He's doing a tour in February.
Now, for those who don't know, he's a musician.
That's right,
and a very good one. He gave me his album. I very much enjoyed it. I told him it's really good. Let's not pump him too much.
No.
I do like
it's all about the comics, yeah. So he bought a van with a bed in that. So I was looking forward to going down in that today, but it's in the shop.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, before he goes back around Europe. Yeah.
How so, you find the mini is in the snow? It's been snowing for those.
It was. You know, there was no snow.
Coming here,
so it was all right. Yeah. It just Mike's a tall guy, so it's like a clown car for him. But you know.
It's like is it the Munsters? What is that cartoon where Frankenstein tries to get in the car? You know.
I think it is the Munsters. Yeah. Or Wacky Races, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly like that. I'm the Igor kind of character for that.
I'm cousin it. It's fine. So what have you got coming up? What conventions?
We've got Ellesmere Port. A local one for us. It's Film and Comic Con.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But it's 20 minutes away from us, so it's nice to do a local one. We've got Oldham in May.
Oldham?
Yeah, Oldham Comic Con.
Yeah,
Dennis. Yeah. And then I keep calling it True Believers Thought Bubble again. Hopefully.
Tables out for Thought Bubble, yeah.
I don't think so. That's being a bit presumptuous, isn't it?
When I ask that question, I think, have I missed it? You know,
no. I just assume. Because, you know. Cool. You got our business there.
Nice one. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Yeah.
Right, it's Dan here. I'm here with Steve, and we're going to be talking about Bow Badges, issue 4, which is released today.
Well, it was out before Christmas, but this is the first main Comic-Con for it, really. Troops is always one of my favourites, so it's always good to aim for Troops for the big release of the issue, really.
So, how many Bow Badges? Is it like going to be a set run, or are you kind of...
I'm aiming at a set run of 6 books.
Oh, nice.
That will wrap up the story as it is. But obviously, like most stories, there'll be openings to carry on with it if I want to. But the 6 book arc is what I'm aiming at, one a year. It's like a 6-year project. So
you get the next one out before you're going to do it this year, basically.
Next one is going to be done for October this year.
Okay, that's good. Are you going to be releasing that for?
What I basically do is aim for October to get the book finished and printed. If I can fit in a Comic-Con between October and Christmas, that's the one where I'll first sell it.
Yeah.
But usually I just hold on to it until Troops in the new year, and that's okay. You know, when it really comes out.
So. Dan Malley's Cheltenham in October something.
Oh, right. Maybe okay. Yeah, I could keep
thinking about
on
gunning for it myself, try and get the first book of Vanguard done. But
well, it's always good to have a goal.
Yeah.
It's always good to have somewhere to aim.
If you kind of like just work nebulously, thinking, oh, I'll get it done when I get it done, it never gets done.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's why I'm trying to keep it quite rigid. Of every October, the next book comes out. So. Once that book is printed, between October and December, I'll usually do paintings and promotional work.
Okay.
And then from January through to the next October is penciling, inking, toning, right. And production of the next book.
Yeah.
And all of the thumbnails and dialogue and all that I'll do on the train on the way to work. So,
you got any, I guess it's a fair way off, but after post-battle badges... Have you got any ideas what you're going to do? Or?
I have a bit of a rest.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Never stop, but just maybe rest a bit. Produce more promotional paintings for Battle Badgers, because I really love to get back into the painting, especially digital painting.
Yeah.
Really enjoying that. Pictures to promote Battle Badgers and continue to sell the books that I've done.
Yeah.
Hopefully do a collected version.
Nice.
Maybe put them all together, try a Kickstarter to see if I can get a graphic novel of it done.
I think that'd do well, honestly.
Hopefully. Yeah. And then if that does do well and that restokes the fire and keeps things moving into maybe more Battle Badgers or whatever next project.
See what goes after that.
Yeah. But I do love Battle Badgers. I love the characters. I really, really enjoy
it. It seems like a perfect kind of property to be bought up by a bigger company and produced by them. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
did you want that, or would you rather keep it as your baby?
It is my baby,
yeah.
And I'm aware of how things have to change and are controlled when they come out of your hands.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm just using it as very much something to keep the fires burning.
Yeah.
So when it is something bigger, you know, maybe if there are a couple of graphic novels of it,
yeah.
And if someone does come along and say, hey, let's take this further, then maybe we can talk then.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's just so much fun to do.
Such a quality comic as well.
Oh, thanks very much, man.
It's good to kind of like just put the comic out and people enjoy it, people read it, and you kind of get so much from it.
That's right, yeah, definitely. And when a hobby is something that you enjoy so much, and when other people give you props for it, you know, it doesn't feel like
fantastic.
Work at all.
Yeah,
that's what keeps it going.
Yeah.
Which is what I always try and plug to people when they say, I want to do my own indie comics. Like, well, find something you really enjoy drawing, find a story you really want to tell, and if when you sit down, you think, I could watch telly or I could play video games, but instead, you end up thinking, no, I'll just draw that thing I enjoy doing. That's how things accumulate, and that's how things grow.
I think one of the things is, like, I've tried to knock playing video games in the head. Not as much, because you put so much time into it and then there's nothing at the end of it.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's hard when there are so many amazing video games out there. I tend to try and keep my game playing just for like Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
So,
but as an artist, you kind of need to take on other creative stuff.
Otherwise,
you're just...
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just kind of like... Well, you need the input.
You do, definitely. I mean, that's why video games are so amazing, because you can step into this other world where this whole team of artists have created an environment with amazing like things to investigate and look at. So it's hard not to be inspired by that, which is why it's great to play them.
Yeah.
But it's just when like you get to the end of the weekend and you think, oh, I was going to do some drawing at some point and I've got to go to work tomorrow. So
we'll ask a question to Antonio. What game are you playing at the moment?
I'm playing Neverwinter, D&D MMO, which is free to play, which is always good.
Yeah.
But it's just... brilliant to see all these worlds that I've read of through playing D&D, see them realised, you know, to see what they've created you can just go and interact with.
Nice.
Before that it was Skyrim.
Skyrim,
I mean, that was like crack. That was so just, you know, that could just eat up whole weeks.
Fashioning ebony daggers to get your...
Exactly, yeah. And then you suddenly realise, like, oh, what did I do last month? Well, I played Skyrim. You're like, okay, maybe I need to nip that in the bud.
Yeah.
So any game that I can pick up and play for, say, half an hour to an hour and then just stop and put down is always good. Which is why Neverwinter's fun, because you get your little kick. You get inspired by the environments and the colour palettes and everything. You think, right, I'll take that and I'll go and do, say, 3 or 4 hours
work. Do you find it kind of you choose games that would actively benefit like battle badges. So like I started playing Red Dead over Christmas, and
right?
And then I thought perhaps I could start working in some cowboys. Like no.
Yeah, well, that, I mean I'm a huge fantasy fan anyway. So for me, it's usually always fantasy stuff, yeah, which is what like battle badges leans towards.
Yeah.
But there are certain games where I just enjoy the art style and the just the creative direction. Like all of the Capcom, Street Fighter, like a lot of the old sort of retro arcade games like Final Fight, those for me, the creative team behind that was so spot on. I'll play those games just for an hour just to absorb the way they drew those characters. Yeah, just amazing.
I agree, they're kind of that. I think they came out like in the 1980s and they still hold a grip on many people today.
Oh, too right, yeah. The character designs in Street Fighter 2. Still, yeah. You look at now and it's like, those are amazing.
They're iconic, like, that's that character. They've distilled that kind of region of the planet where they come from into one character. Yeah. It's just so well done.
And all of them just look like they've got so much power.
Yeah.
Like the postures they put them in.
Yeah.
And then with like Street Fighter 4, when that came out, when they animated them all in 3D but kept that drawn style.
So yeah.
It still looked like cartoony rendered characters. But they just looked amazing.
Like Chun-Li's like kind of a waif. There's like nothing of her, but she's got such a kind of like springy energy.
Those
in that
those
character.
Thighs, she'll kick your head off. You know, it's amazing.
Oh, nice one. Okay, so if you want to find out more about Steve and Battle Badgers, where should they head to?
Well, there's battlebadgers.co.uk, the website. There's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those kind of things. Do a general Google for beast hunting battle badgers, and it'll take you to one of the many technological avenues that I'm plugging it through.
Brilliant.
So.
Cool. Thanks,
Steve. Cheers, Dan.
Have a good day. Okay, I'm here with Jamie Lambert.
It's Lambert.
the writer of the comic that we've mentioned a few times on the show, Dexter's Half Dozen. Right, been going for a few years, but at True Believers, there's a trade of it that's been released, which is amazing. I didn't know the trade was coming, and I've got it in my hands now, and it's glorious. How do you feel about it?
It's a dream come true, to be honest, actually. It was supposed to be released years ago, and then the files were lost on the computer died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so basically I never thought it would happen. And so obviously Danny from Dead Stars come in and helped us sort it all out. And it's the best it will ever look. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Because Dexter's Half Dozen has been through Dead Stars since issue one, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, no, we started off ourselves, Beard and Skull Comics, and then we did a few issues together, and then luckily the Dead Star guys came in and saved us, because Dave and I don't really have a clue how to sell comics, so they saved us really, and they've come along and helped us out loads.
That's really taken it to the next level, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, totally. Yeah, I don't think we'd ever got this far without them. They've been fantastic.
And it's a beautiful book. I mean, for those that don't know about Dexter's Half Dozen, like, how would you pitch it to someone as
well? Well, I always say it's a fast-paced action horror story set in World War II. A few people have described. I recently described it to someone as Where Eagles Dare with zombies and werewolves in. So
that's that's a home run of a pitch.
Well, yeah. If you like the sound of that, you will like it. Yeah. That's the main thing. And basically, the whole idea behind it is just there's no message, there's no preaching. It's just loads of action, loads of fun. So hopefully some funny.
It's proper World War II pulpy. I mean, they're a ragtag group. All the characters in the group, the main sort of commando group, they're all different characters. Volstagg is Volstagg.
Gorstag,
yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't turn up until issue four. Yeah.
Issue four? Yeah. But already, he's a huge part of the team.
And he was an accident, because actually he makes his first appearance at the end of issue three, and we liked him so much, we brought him to life, because he was dead at the end of the issue.
But it's one of those things that when you're writing it, you just don't know when a character's going to take off, is it?
Yeah. Totally, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people come up to us and tell us about the characters they like, and, you know, it's a wide range, you know.
I mean, before he actually turns up, you've already got such a well-refined group of characters anyway. I mean, just name some of the ones that are in the group and what they do, because they're all mental.
Well, the leader of a team is Sergeant Freeman, and he's basically He's a normal soldier. There's nothing different about him, except that he's got a bit of a death wish, so he's completely fearless. Then we have Morris Doyle, who is the big muscular East End heavy weapons specialist.
Say heavy weapons, these guns are huge.
Yes, they're insanely huge, and you know, but he's great. He's the muscle in the team. He's not the brightest, but he's personally my favorite character. I like writing him. Yeah. He's fun. We've got James Harlington Drake, who's a self-obsessed pilot. He can fly anything. Not necessarily land it, but he can fly anything. Then we've got Gajilama, who's a Gurkha who mysteriously cuts out his own tongue, and he's pretty handy with the blades.
For me, he's one of the most interesting characters. I mean, for one, you don't see many comic books with Gurkhas in that I know of. I mean, there may have been some old Commando comics in the past, but in the mainstream sort of comics field, you don't see them.
Well, no, we had to have a Gurkha in there because they're just insanely badass, you know. And obviously his backstory, which we will get to at some point, ties into the mythology of where he's from as well. Then we've got Harper, who's literally almost completely useless in combat, but he has an extensive knowledge of the occult. And he speaks German.
Which comes into play when you have a lot of evil Nazi villains messing around with the supernatural.
For first mission, he is pretty useless, but he does come into his own later on, you know. And this
story is wild. I mean, it is a case of, like, it's hardcore horror, isn't it? I mean, there's proper some slapstick humour, but there's a lot of humour in it. But you're a horror fan, and it's hardcore horror.
I'm a total horror guy. So, Sometimes I try to make it really dark, but always the humour always creeps in.
Yeah.
But we always said from the start that if we ever came to a point where we weren't sure what we were going to do, either go dark and scary or lighten it up, we would always go the darker route.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no one really, we're in control of what we want to do.
Yeah.
Or of what we do, so there's no one holding us back.
Yeah.
So.
And plus, like, when we talk about small press comics, you usually see one, two issues or something, but I know you've been working at it for a long time, but you managed to put out quite a few issues of this, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got 10 issues altogether. We started about 10 years ago, nearly 11, And basically, the first two issues...
I mean, 10 issues is impressive.
Well, yeah, you know, we did the first two issues, got them printed in America because back then it was cheaper, and we sort of printed up thousands, and it was crazy.
Just thought, this is how we're going to make it.
we had no idea what we were doing. We literally had no idea. The first issue was lettered by hand.
Yeah.
It was literally the script was cut out and stuck onto the page. It was that. Yeah. That's how little we knew.
Really?
Yeah. So it's, you know, we've learned. Obviously, it's improved so much as we've gone along.
Yeah.
What's great about the trade paperback is we've gone back and just tidied up everything to make it sort of acceptable.
And obviously, since issue one, like, you're working with Dave Clifford on the art, and you know, we've seen some of his work on other stuff.
I mean, yeah,
he's a brilliant artist anyway. That has such a unique style.
Oh, totally.
But this is your baby, isn't it? You know, the both of you.
Oh, totally. Well, he's my brother-in-law, and basically, his artwork takes it to another level because there are certain. In the script, on one of the pages, in the script it just says Will Perkis is standing on a railway track with a couple of zombies behind him. And then you actually see the final page, and it's insane. And if I'd said, oh yeah, can you draw 25 zombies behind him, please? He would have killed me. But he did it. And yeah, so the art, you know, obviously Dave came up with all the character designs.
Yeah.
And it's just very energetic. And he's, I think another one of his strengths is his facial expressions. Because a lot of comics, I think a lot of when people first start making comics, one of the main mistakes is the characters always either look angry, or even when they're saying something,
or they just look dead in the face. There's no
it's really off putting. Whereas a lot of with Dave's artwork, you can see sometimes you don't even need the dialogue, but we keep it in there because otherwise there'd be no point in me.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously, you say like, the trade is a dream come true, as it is for a lot of people. Obviously, the first trade, there's going to be a few. But another interesting thing is, when it came to this trade, you went back and redid some of it. Because obviously, the first issues, like, I mean, you lost files, but they're also quite a few years ago, whereas you went in to redo stuff. What did you actually rework?
Well, obviously, there are a few typos along the way, which we're not going to mention. Because they still hurt me deep inside. But I think I didn't change from a script point of view. I changed a couple of lines of dialogue just to make them sound a bit more natural. You know, some of them were three or four lines were a bit clunky, and with experience of writing, you know, 11 more issues, so there was mainly that.
Was it like the characters had found their voice a little bit more over those issues as well?
Also, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you do find their voice, and the characters get easier to write for. You know, the longer you go along, there's a natural rhythm, which is a bit of a shame because we're going to be killing one off soon. And it's gutting because he's probably one of the easier ones to write for as well. So that's a bit of a. But, you know, it's the story dictates.
Oh, shocker. Shocker. Which means that people have to buy all of the issues and the trade to get caught up before they get their hearts broken.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So where can they get, like, Dexter's Half Dozen?
Well, it's available on the Dead Star Publishing website. And, obviously, Dead Star go to a lot of conventions. I go to a few when I pluck up the courage to leave the house. So obviously it's available online, and they've got physical copies, e-books as well, and apparently the trade should be on Comixology soon, hopefully.
Oh, well, look out for that, folks. And Jamie, thank you very much.
A pleasure, thank you.
I'm here with Sam London. We talk a lot, mate, don't we?
We do.
For hours on end. Obviously, I sort of rant at you. But you're inside.
I like to listen.
As long as you don't like to watch, we're fine. Let's talk about your Kickstarter. So give us a little, which is right in the middle of the Kickstarter at the moment, isn't it? So tell us a little bit about that.
So Beyond Milford Green is the follow-up story to the first instalment, Milford Green, which centres around a socially awkward Victorian inventor called Alfie Fairfield. And what happens in the first one, without giving anything away really, a spaceship crash lands in front of him, and he discovers that we're not alone in this universe. And so this one immediately follows on from that story, but it's basically those Victorian villagers now go into space. It's a Victorian space adventure. So if you kind of like the idea of Star Trek with a Victorian twist, then you're going to like this. So, you know, people can check it out on Kickstarter, just search Beyond Milford Green.
Because it's... we were just looking at your phone, and you've hit 44% 3 days in. So, and I know you've got quite a high goal.
Yep.
For art to pay the artist, etc. So it's going well. Please, don't we? Yeah.
So 44% in 3 days is statistically it's good for a Kickstarter, and fingers crossed that means that it should go through and everything. But yeah, as you're kind of saying, it's really to fund the artist because it's a 60-page. Book.
It's an album, essentially, European size.
Totally. And I'm really excited to get it out to the world. And there's been so much support. I've really been blown over by the level of support from everyone. So.
I was chatting to Pete Jingle about it. He was standing next to me a second ago. I don't know, he's legged it off. And saying the only way we work is by supporting each other. There's no other way of doing it. And I think we've got to see it like that. Like podcasts, like we support your podcast, you support our podcast, we support your Kickstarter, you support our. It's got to be done like that. Otherwise, everyone's going to fucking fail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how it works.
I mean, the community that's here, even today.
Noticeably today, really is.
It really is, isn't it? It's incredible, and the level of support between everybody, it's magical, and it feels like it's the start of kind of, you know, a real solid community for small press in the UK.
Away from convention inspired to do something.
Yeah.
And I think this does it, El Cap does it.
Scythe does it, you know, all the Leamington, all, Nottingham, all these sort of places. They're the place I want to go to, rather than just coming away with a bag full of fucking packed lunch boxes and tired feet. You know what I mean? And a and a fucking tail that you stick up your arse and wags if you heat up a bit. You know,
sure, so, mate.
I'll put you off then. No, yeah. Okay. So, what else you got? Any other projects on the go?
Yes, I've got a couple of other projects that I'm hopefully doing. Well, I am going to be doing for Fairspark. I can kind of talk about is with Rosie Alexander. We're starting off with a Little Heroes. We're going to be in the next Little Heroes anthology, which is science, and it's a sci-fi story, and it's called The Twin Paradox, and it's about one twin that basically ends up falling through a wormhole and then being away from the other twin, and because of time dilation, like when they come back together, one of the twins is like a couple of years younger, even though they're identical twins, and just trying to get that idea of how time dilation actually works to kids.
That works, doesn't it? It's interesting.
Yeah. So it is literally called The Twin Paradox. It's kind of like an Einsteinian thing, but I've managed to make it into a 6-page story, and based on that, we're actually going to make a full comic.
Yeah.
Out of it, an ongoing series, hopefully. So,
it's like an intro in there, and then what's spin it out into a long form comic with Fairspark?
It will just be standard, you know, 22 page issues, and hopefully we'll be kickstarting that in April.
Yeah, that's shaping up Volume 3.
Yeah.
I only say that because I'm in it as well.
Yeah. It's the who's who.
Only the desperate but classy. That's the,
I'll go with that.
So where can people find you online?
Yes, so best place is Twitter, which is at Samuel G. London. And then my social handles are those on Instagram and all of that jazz as well.
And what should you search on again on Kickstarter for the current project?
It's Beyond Milford Green.
Beyond Milford
Green. And then that'll come up.
Lovely. Nice one. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
I'm going to have to be coherent now,
aren't
I?
Yeah.
Right, I'm here with the man, the legend, the other side of the coin that is Sean Dobie.
Hello there.
Yes, my long-time compadre is here at True Believers, and he is very excitedly. You've launched issue 5 of Descending Outlands, the end of the epic.
Exactly. Well, not the end of the epic, but end of this story arc.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm hoping to do more eventually, yeah. You know. Yeah. But, yeah, it's kind of a landmark. So we started this together. Yeah. You know, you had Red Mask, I had this.
Yeah.
You know.
And you've already overtaken me.
Yeah.
Not only that.
Head up, down.
Yeah, not only that, your books are massive as well. So you've done shitloads in the time.
My penis.
Oh, already ruined it.
Yeah, what point do you cut these things out?
And you, yeah, I don't cut the interviews.
You bastard.
Anyway, no, back to Descending Outlands. Obviously, this is a massive thing for you, isn't it, really? Because it's 5 issues, but also every issue got bigger with each.
Yeah.
The story just wouldn't be contained, would it? It's a massive epic story.
Yeah, definitely. I think it started out around about 30 pages. No, probably less than that. 30 pages for the first issue. And then as each issue's come out, more pages. And I think they clocked in about 44 for this one. So,
Just ignore Tony. Tony's trying to put us off.
I can't.
Don't
keeps...
ignore me.
I love you too, Tony. I do wish you'd stop touching me. I don't. I want him to touch me.
I knew this is the interview that was going to go wrong, and it had to be you.
This is the uncasting kind of interview.
But, I mean, back to the book, though, because it is one that I know, like, having done conventions with you, people ask about, even if you've just released a new issue, people ask when's the next issue, don't they? You know, people really bought into the story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was always going to be one comic, but it's just too expensive. Yeah. So it was broken down into 5 mini ones, and it's just nice to actually get to the end, because... Yeah. You know, you start off and you think, oh, I want to, but can I really get to the end of it? And it's just quite a milestone.
Could you went for the single issues rather than, like, because it's how many pages of the story in total? Over 120.
It's over that. I mean, if you're looking at probably averaging 40 pages over, you know, 5 issues, neither of us can do math.
No, especially at this time of day.
Exactly. But I was working it out that probably, you know, you're looking at least 7-8 grand's worth of money on all of that. And I'd never do that in one go, hiring
plus,
artists.
Plus it's the timing of it, isn't it? I mean, you could either do an original graphic novel and take 5 years, which in some ways might be frustrating when you're watching everyone else release something and you're thinking, I've got my product that I want to release. So you chose to go the individual route. Have you found doing that instead of doing a one-and-done graphic novel?
It's a lot more manageable.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's really good because when I look at the end, the last issue, compared to the first issue, they still work together as a whole. But you can see how far they've come, the artwork, the storytelling, my colouring in it, you know. Even your lettering is you know, very different to how you started.
And like, did you find that with the writing as well? You've grown confidence?
Yeah, because
trying to tackle the whole thing in one.
I think the first issue, you're so worried about how you're going to introduce it, what people are going to say. And then after a while, you have no choice. The story's started. It's, well, to go on this weather, it's like you're on that slippery hill.
Yeah.
And it's going to get to the bottom anyway, so you might as well just enjoy the ride.
And I mean, big credit to you, because you started on this journey, and as we know with the independent scene, you know, a lot of those people, we say, don't start an epic if you're not going to finish it. And you hear people talk a big game, but never get to it. But you've got to the end of your first arc. You've got you've got the first story that you set out to do.
Yeah. Yeah, so now the next thing is to put that together into a single book, which I guess
could come together quite quickly because we've got it all ready to go. But you don't want to rush it because obviously the fifth issue and the rest of the other issues have to have their time in the sun as well, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't just want to put it together and just have a one-off book. I want to put some extra bits in there. I've got artwork that people have done.
Yeah.
I've got original sketches that, you know, either new and some other people did of the original characters.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that it's a worthwhile book. It's not just, this is done, let's put it together, there you go.
And that's the way it needs to be for people that want to double dip as well, don't they? People that, oh, I had the series.
Double dipping.
I can see in your eyes you love the phrase double dip. Don't do this to me. No, but, you know, you want the people that read their issues to come back for the trade, isn't it? Was that always like, I mean, it's going to be quite a hefty trade and, like, you know, it's going to be brilliant, I think, but that was always your vision. I'm going to something huge.
Do it as one. And I would like to do the second one as a whole, but I just know price-wise, you just can't.
Yeah.
Not while you're funding it yourself.
Yeah.
So, again, I'll break it down.
Yeah.
I think the question for me now is whether I go straight into this next phase of Descending Outlands or whether I do a break.
Yeah.
So I think the next...
Because I know you've got ideas. You've talked about me about other ideas that you have.
Yeah.
Because you've been on the Descending Outlands journey for 5 years.
Basically,
pretty much.
But then while that's been going on, I've been kind of working on some horror things to do a little anthology for that. And, you know, we've talked about a fantasy one I'm kind of thinking of doing as well. And, you know, of course, I love you. And I'm going to do a book all about you, Vince.
It'll be a very short book.
Very messy.
Oh, no.
Because of you.
So, obviously, for those that couldn't be here to see the work, I mean, where can people see pages or pick up issues of Standing Outlands? You know, see it because I think it's one of those books that, you know, you've got great covers from, like, Chris Imber, you know, and you've got, like, Tinto and amazing artists on it. It is definitely is. As soon as they see something, they're going to want to buy it, aren't they? You know,
I hope so.
Yeah,
that's the plan.
I've always said
it was the first thing I've really written. And so I thought, well, even if it's utter crap, at least I'll make it look the part. So that's why I wanted to make sure it was a polished piece with regards to the artwork, the colouring, the lettering. And from what I've heard feedback-wise, you know, it's actually not that badly written, which is quite good. So
which is nice.
It works,
yeah. So where can people get hold of, like, issues?
Well, obviously conventions. I'm going to try and book a load more this year. I haven't got any penned down yet. But other than that, it's on Comixology as ever. And you can go to evilcat.com. That's evilcat with a K. Where you can kind of buy them from there and I'll post them out. That's basically it. Or just ask me on Twitter really nicely and I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, you are a nice chap, aren't you?
I try my best.
Yeah, I thought I'd say that off on the record, because off the record, I'm horrible to you, aren't I?
You do horrible things to me.
Shut your face. Thanks, Sean.
Is that your cup of tea?
What do you have, badges?
Sort of
I give you badges, you mother bitch.
A yellow picture of a unicorn, that's
badges,
your
badges, mother bitch.
I give you badges.
I blow you.
Then I blow you.
Bad Boys?
Yeah, I've not seen Bad Boys.
Oh, you've not seen Bad Boys?
No.
Have we started recording?
Yeah, we started. Oh, we started 20 seconds ago. Right, so True Believers is almost at an end.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few people packing up.
Yeah.
You know what it's like at the end of a convention? It's
the blood's in the water.
Yeah. Everyone's knackered.
Yeah. Everyone's going for it.
My balls are hurting.
Yeah. What?
Unrelated incident.
Yeah. But it has been, it's been a good day.
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
great sales, great people, great chat.
Where are you? Who are you? Where's this corporate Dan? He's back.
I'll tell you what it is. It's because he's been eating sweets all day.
Yeah, he's all happy now, isn't he?
Yeah. Thanks to
us. And he got Jeff Senior to hold his comic.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Hold it.
Hold it. Fuck it. You might listen to this. So,
is there anything you want to say to Jeff Senior?
You're a ledge. And look forward to having you on the show, potentially.
How long is it?
That sounded really bad. Yeah. It's been a long day, come on.
It has been a long day, but a good day. Obviously, the launch of Awesome Comics number 4 has gone well.
Yeah.
Hello to anyone that is listening to this show for the first time ever.
Yeah, we've met quite a few listeners.
Yeah.
You got a free comic, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, thank you for, you know, whether it's purchasing the comic, giving us some art or whatever. We've been very lucky this year, haven't we? So yeah, it's been a great day. What have been some of the how was your panel, Tony?
Yeah, good actually. Yeah, load of questions. Just had a laugh. Just mucked about.
Yeah, pretty much that's what you do all the time.
It's my life.
I gave some sweets to kids and didn't end up in front of a magistrate.
You know, I mean, that's a success, isn't it, Dad?
Yeah, success.
Yeah. Is that the first time?
The little victories.
No. Been on one. Ever since that picture I sent you yesterday of him holding a coffee cup up when he came in from the goal, it's been non-stop butcher.
Yeah. Non-stop butcher all the time. I mean, we won't go into what he apparently said quite loud in the restaurant last night, but I wasn't even there for that. I wish I was. But no, you know, to everyone that set up True Believers this year, I think they smashed it, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been really good.
Yeah, it's really good. The atmosphere's been really good. Setup was really nice. It was nice to meet some people for the first time that we hadn't met.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, yeah.
Didn't like everyone. But well, like everyone,
you can't like everyone, can you? And we're not going to name any names, but.
Yeah. But John Tucker's a fucking legend.
Oh, yeah. He's very quickly becoming part of the family, isn't he, John Tucker?
So,
there's not much more to be said. Obviously, we managed to get some interviews, and we hope you enjoyed all the interviews.
Loads of interviews. We started off by going, we ain't going to get any interviews again, are we? And then we got a load.
Yeah.
You keep forcing the mic into my hand.
Yeah.
Once we broke the seal.
Yeah, exactly. Dan, you were a little bit nervous with the interviews this time, weren't you?
I wasn't sure about it.
Why was that?
But,
you should have confidence in yourself, babes.
Yeah. I know. I got the first one behind me, and it was all right. So.
Yeah. He got his first interview behind him.
Yeah.
And then he was all right.
Yeah. No, but it's been quality, so enjoy the rest of the show. I can't actually remember what we talked about.
No, we've already done an outro, so this is this pre-outro.
Yeah, back to the show.
Back to the show. And that's from the three of us, but we're going to sign off with Joseph Merrick. Do you want to say something?
Stay awesome.
There you have it, folks. Yet more chaos and audio and whatever that was.
whatever happened.
Yeah. Whatever happens, happened, which will be on our gravestones.
Yeah, and you two, you've got something planned and you probably know, everyone knows what it is by now.
I mean, by the time that people hear this, you know, it's probably already happened and you're still in the middle of a motorway, absolutely bollock naked. So... But maybe I think too much.
Heavily from your
record. Why is it not bollocks naked?
I don't know.
But I don't know. It just, dare I say, it rolls off the tongue better when it's just a one. Anyway. So there was that bit of fun. We got a couple of shout outs. And what we wanted to do, as this was True Believers, wanted to do some shout outs to some other comic conventions that are happening this year. I think at some point in the future, when we do a Three Amigos show, we'll do a shout out for. to everyone about any little events or any little shows that anyone knows about for us to talk about. We want to do a focus on this.
Because yeah, there's
so many, yeah, there's so many events that we hear about, and more of these great little sort of indie events are popping up all the time. So we definitely want to mention them. But there's a few conventions that we vaguely mentioned before, but we just want to give a little spotlight on them on the shout out section. So first up on the list would be Cardiff Comics Carnival. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Which is happening on Sunday, March the 24th. 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Church Street, Cardiff. Free entry. There's going to be lots of people there. We'll probably be talking more. We are going to be talking more about it in the future, aren't we?
Yeah, probably.
But that's
quite a small venue. I think it's like in a pub. I think it's a bit like Bath was. I get the impression it's going to be that sort of size.
There's going to be small press comics, zines, and illustrations. You know, illustrators and that sort of stuff. So that'd be good. So anyone in the area, definitely go to @ComicsCarnival on Twitter to find out more. Because
I've got plans to go to that. Because I think I was mentioning to Iz I'm going to be in Cardiff. So I'm going to go for lunch with her and Rich, actually, when I'm down there, which I'm looking forward to.
That's the first one to look out for. Also, if you're up north in Scotland in the UK, then definitely, I mean, I'm sure loads of people will be signed up for this anyway, but Dunfermline Comic Con 2019 is looking very, very good. That's taking place March the 30th.
Nice.
List of guests, here's just some of the guests. D. Cunniff.
Previous guest.
Yeah, Mark Ellerby, Brendan Fletcher, Sarah Grayley, Mariko Tamaki.
Is she going to it, is she?
Yeah. Yeah, she is indeed.
She did Louisa, which I really liked. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so there's going to be even more. Like, there's lots of indie guests. If you go on Twitter and, you know, if you find Dunfermline Comic Con on Twitter, you'll be able to find loads of information because they seem to be announcing stuff very regularly at the moment. If you go to littleshopofheroes.co.uk, you can see the guests and get tickets and stuff. And it is definitely one that... I would definitely check out if I was near. So, you know, I'm quite jealous of all you guys up there who are going to be able to check this one out because it looks like it's going to be a cracking show. So that is on March the 30th. Then the next one we've got on the list, which is Lawless. Yes.
Oh, yeah, we're going to that, aren't we? We got a table at that, guys.
We do indeed.
Oh, nice one. Yeah.
Yes.
We had a blast at, well, it was called Lawgiver last year, wasn't it? But we had a blast of that last year, didn't we?
Yeah, Lawgiver before was, we had some audio from the actual show. It was a bit of a Judge Dredd and 2000 AD convention. They've expanded a little bit. So it's, and also it's Lawless as tribute to Carlos Esquerra. I was getting that wrong. So it's a celebration of British comics taking place on Saturday, May the 18th, 2019, at the Doubletree Hilton in Bristol.
Is that where we stayed before?
Yes, that's where it was before, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is some of the names that are going to be there. John Wagner, Alan Hebden, Ian Gibson, Alan Grant.
I want to meet Alan Hebden. I heard an interview with him. I re-listened to a 2000 AD one of his, and he's done loads of stuff for like Battle as well as 2000 AD.
Nice.
I think he did Meltdown Man. I think at the top of my head, which is one of my favourite 2000 AD stories. Ooh,
nice.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing him. Yeah. Cool.
Jock's going to be there. Other guests include like Mike Collins, Henry Flint, Boo Cook, Simon Davis, Dylan Teague. Abby Bulmer, Sally Jane Hurst, Dan Cornwall, Paul Williams. I mean, there's a Patrick Goddard. There's an awful lot of guests going to this. We're going to have a table there, so we'll be shifting our wares as well. So like I say, Saturday, May the 18th, 2019. Hopefully, I don't want it to be one of these shows that people overlook that's right on their doorstep, you know, because Bristol used to have quite a thriving sort of comic event. Sort of scene, didn't
and I know they're opening it up, so it's not just 2000 AD anymore.
Yeah.
They've opened it up to small press and British creators and British comics, and I'm over the moon to see what British comics are going to have there.
I'm
having a little bit of a real renaissance at the moment from a buying and reading point of view of British comics, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So seriously, folks, they're open for trader tables as well. They are cheap. I'm not going to say the price on air, but
I think they're out. I think they're sold out, aren't they?
Have they sold out?
I think so, yeah. Okay. They're out of tables now.
Oh, well.
I think I saw a post out the other day, all the tables were sold.
Oh, well, that's amazing then. That's all I need to know. But if you want to go to the show and find out more and meet loads of great people, then follow them on Twitter @LawlessComicCon. That's where you'll be able to find out more information. So that's May the 18th. Right, so you've got the next one, Tony, after...
Yeah, we're only talking one more. I think there are loads more, aren't we?
Yeah, there's loads more.
Each episode is a plan, isn't it? But and I was going to say the deadline for applying is coming up for tables, but as you listen to this, it will have literally just gone. So I'm afraid all the tables applications have gone for LCAF, but LCAF is the 7th to the 9th of June. I think it's the place now for that side of the art, you know, illustrative, arty comics world, isn't it? I think it's the destination now for them all.
Yeah.
And it'll be a strong year post Hilda and post Kingdom winning all those awards and stuff like that. I think it's going to be a great year.
That's one that I really would like to make it down to.
Oh man, I really want you to come to it. Come down and I'll put you up and we'll go to it and you'll see that. And you know the people that go like Sarah's there and Simon Russell and Stuart McCune came over one year and I had a blast with him. I don't know, I unglued him from the pub and poured him onto a bus. But the yeah, all the Avery Hill guys are there. Good comics. You'll know nearly everyone at it, mate, because of this show. And I genuinely think you and Dan will really enjoy it. I find it actually a really inspiring event to create from. You know, it's one of those.
That's what I love about these events, isn't it? Whenever I walk away, you know, I'm either a little bit lighter in the wallet, or I'm hugely inspired. You know,
even had their own beer last year at it. You know, which did make me chuckle.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those ales, was it?
It was a little bit.
I just can't get on board with them.
What were we drinking on Saturday? Friday night, just shots.
Well, I mean, let's face it, the baby sham was flowing. You know, there were.
So Dan's gone. Has Dan gone to be sick again?
Yeah, he has actually. Hang on. Oh yeah, he's gone.
I thought he finished all his vomiting at Troops.
I know. Well, that's the problem because we recorded early, and he drinks in the week, doesn't he?
Yeah,
you know what I mean, he's an absolute monster. But so you know, I don't think he's going to be coming back for the rest of this episode. So
no,
stay tuned.
Get well soon, Dan.
Get well soon, Dan. We'll miss you. Yeah, you're right, aren't you?
Yes, and yes.
He's all right.
Good. Yeah, he's right. Yeah.
So it's just you and me, Tony.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
We are the last survivors on the ship, as it were. Yeah, so there's loads of great events. This is very much an event-orientated show, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I just mention a Kickstarter again?
Yes, you can.
Norse comic, Once Upon Again, The Marriage of Njord and Skadi by John Mason and Simon Russell. It will have smashed its fucking Kickstarter goal by now, but just a little shout-out to Simon, because he very kindly mentioned that I'd had a little early look at it, and we'd actually chatted through a few points, as he did with a couple of other people, and... it's not easy. He's a thoughtful contributor to our page and a very talented artist and storyteller, Simon. And I really hope this does well. So go and back that one.
So what's
it's
that
a bit
called?
Different as well. It's a Norse comic, Once Upon Again, The Marriage of Njord and Skadi.
Nice.
It's a sort of folktale sort of comic. Yeah. It's different. It's different. And it looks great. It looks amazing.
Speaking of like Norse-like stuff, have you seen the latest peek at what Martin Simpson is working on?
No, I haven't seen this. No,
He's working on a new project called Njord. @simo_paints, just follow him on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever, because you know anyone who likes Needleman, and everyone likes Needleman, needs to follow his creator. He's a super nice guy as well. But if you go to his Twitter and look at the Njord preview piece, I think this is going to be epic. it's only one image, and I thought, well, I've already bought that.
I've already got the idea of the story I want to do with him. You know, you see artists, you think,
yeah.
And then you're reading. I got inspired to reboot a character in my own brain this week.
Yeah,
and I think he'd be great for it. I'll tell you about it. I'll tell you about it after the recording.
Oh,
but
nice.
I was actually thinking of approaching about something, but we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, watch the space.
Yeah.
Yes, but speaking of comics, we're just going to sign you off with a couple of cheeky little ones.
Okay.
Tony's probably more in depth because he's got a notebook that's like the Old Testament.
Papyrus.
So I just want to have a quick shout first for a couple.
Okay.
Both on Comic House that I read. The Last Sheriff. I got round to reading Last Sheriff number 5 recently on Comic House. This is obviously from the Reckless Hero guys. Written by Chris Jenkins. The artist for number 5 is David Tinto, who I know from working on Descending Outlands. Chris Imber, obviously, cover duties as always. You know, it's a Jenkins and Imber baby, this one. And The Last Sheriff is... There's a reason it gets mentioned a lot over the past couple of years. You know, they've managed to churn out five brilliantly professional... I mean, this is... You know, this sits side by side with all of these, in parentheses, professional books that you see on the shelves. Hugely quality work. I mean... the story synopsis of issue 5 is following the successful sacking of Railtown, the sheriff and his new posse are on the run from the coalition's top bounty hunter, 6. Now, if you're not sure what that means, read the other 4 issues it is well worth it. The character design is amazing. They get artists and they get like-minded sort of people to work on their books. It was the same when Brian Vander did Operation Boom, actually. The Reckless guys work with like-minded and people with similar styles that fit into their world, and it works perfectly. And Last Sheriff is brilliant. I thought it was going to be the last issue, but it looks like there's going to be more, and I cannot wait.
Okay,
I don't know why I thought it was the last issue. I guess... I don't know, because I'm stupid. Maybe because I thought my comic was 5 issues, so therefore no one else can do it a comic longer than that. But yeah, you can find this on Comic House, but please, 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 if you see the Reckless Hero guys at a show, I mean, you won't miss their table, because it's pretty epic.
Because it says Reckless Hero.
Yeah, it's got Reckless Hero on it. And Chris is always like doing commissions and stuff. And they've got loads of prints. But just grab their comic books, because, you know...
They'd probably be playing E7. Something like that.
Yeah. He'll be riffing. So just pick up anything from the Rex Hero boys. We don't need to convince you, because you've probably already got all their stuff anyway. And another one that I want to mention, but I'm pretty the reason this is going to be a quicker one is because I'm pretty sure that you recommended it on a past show, Tony.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. And this is Close. From
I've certainly written a review of it. I can't remember whether recommended it.
I know there was a lot of talk amongst us about this book.
I think I talked about it on the Kickstarter. I think that's where I mentioned it. I think I mentioned their Kickstarter, but I did put a review up, and go to the back page. I've got a pull quote.
Lovely. That's all right, isn't it?
We're doing it. We'll do anything for a pull quote, won't we?
We will. yes, Close is, after hearing a lot about this book, and certainly after Sidesy's last work, Impossible, you know, I was hugely excited about this one. It's written by Chris Sides, artist is Chris Travell, the cover artist is Colin Lorimer, letters by Ken Reynolds. It's a mature book, and basically the synopsis is Jared Close rejoins society after 6 months in prison with a restraining order against celebrity starlet Kerry Amos. To celebrate, he goes back to the only thing he's been thinking about each night as the cell lights go out, stalking the object of his obsession. Events take a dark turn as Jared goes from voyeur to witness and finds himself on the run as the prime suspect. This is a very interesting and hugely well-executed book.
Yeah.
It was, you know, as soon as I started it, it's one and done. Do you know what I mean? I just absolutely breezed through it. It's a very thought-provoking story as well at the same time.
It's a thriller about a stalker, which is kind of an English stalker, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, in
from
this
the
time,
point of view of the stalker, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, in this day and age when people go, oh, that sounds like You, obviously that Netflix, you know, the Netflix show.
This was long before You came
out. But this was before that. And it's just really well written.
And a good twist.
Yeah, a good twist. An ending that I didn't see coming. It was one of those things that I genuinely wondered how it was going to end. And we do talk about not enough people are taking those risks or trying to do something unexpected with the way a story goes. It's the same with all media, but I know recently, you know, with comics, like, you know what's going to happen in the end. And yes, I know that even like with superhero comics, you know the hero is going to win in the end, but still do something a little different with it. You know, take us on that journey. And this definitely took me on a journey, and that was why when it finished I thought, and I read this a few weeks ago, and the only reason I haven't mentioned it yet is because I thought you recommended it.
I can't remember, mate. Oh, you know what, my memory's like, it's fucking terrible.
But when I got back on Comic House, I gave it another quick read, and I thought, I've got to mention this one, because it is,
I kind of like, it's kind of, I like the difference between the cover and the interiors. The cover's very sort of design heavy. It's very slick in a good way. You know, it doesn't give too much away, but gives a certain vibe to the story. And then you get in, and Lord Travell's art is raw and rough and real and immediate. And do you know what I mean? And dark and noir. You know, and I like that, the way it turns. It's like reading the old Bond books, and then the covers were sort of very glamorous when you got into it. It was about him beating people up and shagging birds. You know, it's got that sort of duplicitous stuff that actually kind of works together. I mean, Travell is my hero. Yeah, Travell is literally my hero. Every time I see him, he makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a top bloke. I mean, part of me thinks that in terms of the atmosphere of the book, one of the pinups might serve better as a cover, because there's an amazing pinup by Matt Rook.
Okay, yeah, I like Matt's work. Matt's a great artist. You know, Matt should be pro-level artist, I'd say that now.
Yeah.
Matt should be working for Dark Horse or something like that. I've always said that. And he's a really nice guy.
And you'll probably know
are like a real great company.
Yeah, you'll probably know the pin-up I'm talking about. It's the main character in a hood. He's holding the phone up to his
face. Oh, yes, I do know the one. They posted that online, didn't they? Yeah.
So good. So good.
Yeah, also sort of representative, and in a little bit like the cover is currently, but it's got like a more of a sort of dirty sort of.
It's more of a movie poster type thing, isn't it? It's, you know,
yeah. I know what you mean. And I have to say, Sidesy, I'll back anything Sidesy does, because he's a thoughtful writer. Do you know what I mean? He pulls it off every time, and I kind of, well, apart from the fact he's our mate and he's a top fucking bloke, but I do like his writing. He's an interesting guy. Yeah, and he's another guy who should be working for a big, you know.
Yeah,
he should be writing Shade the Changing Man, or, you know, he should be writing something for Vertigo. Yeah. You know what I mean? He should be picked up, I think.
Yeah,
you know, that's enough for me being nice about him, because
if he's listening,
yeah,
you smell. No, all seriousness, you know, La Sheriff and Close, you should definitely check both of them out. They're both on Comic House, so I know a lot of our listeners have that subscription, so if you haven't checked them out yet, please do, because you will not regret it. Yeah. And if you see these guys at shows, just pick up the book, because they're just well worth it. And trust me, there's exciting stuff from both of those groups of creators, you know, for the next couple of years. Get them now before they start charging too much for commissions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Before suddenly it goes up to fucking 160 quid and their page rate's 50. Whatever.
Yeah. So that's my one. Okay, what's yours, Tony?
Well, mine's another Comic House one, but it is also one that I've read previously as well. So I read it, the creator posted it on our Facebook page. It says, anyone got any pointers or anyone got any opinions? And then it's put past me, and he posted the whole story up. And I thought, this is good. This is why I like this page, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's Romans versus Aliens.
Created
by Manuel, Angie, and Jose Juan Barber. And it's art and writing by Jose Juan Barber. And it's... it is exactly that. It's got a great cover of a Roman emperor, you know, with the headpiece and all this sort of thing, with blood-soaked sword in his backpack and a blood-soaked sort of fist and forearm. It's black and white. It's another book, actually, we talked about, with black and white with spots of red used for blood. So a Roman army are fighting the barbarian Gaul hordes. When suddenly, and this kind of happens really early in the book, and I like that you're dropped into it like this. I like what Bendis always said: start the story by dropping yourself into the action immediately. Don't worry about leading up to it. Don't worry about the origin story. Drop into the action. And I kind of like people who do that, you know, because I find some sort of wind-ups into stories a bit boring. But he drops you straight in, and as they're sort of fighting, they look up overhead, and there's the sort of classic 1950s black and white invasion of the aliens. Flying saucers flying over the top of them, and a load of the soldiers are dragged up via tractor beams into their ships. But the emperor is no mere single imaginary emperor. This is actually Caesar himself.
Let's face it, Jean-Claude Van Damme as Caesar.
Oh, have you seen it? I just brought it up
and just been looking through it, and there's one page that I have to mention in a minute, but
he does like. It starts off with him doing like a Jean-Claude Van Damme splits, and then he sort of does a somersault into the arena at one point. But he's reveling in his defeat of the Gauls, and as I said, doing the Jean-Claude Van Damme stretching exercises, which is done here, written in here. And then the leader of the Gauls attends his sort of fort and surrenders his arms. But he says, like, we surrender. The Gauls surrender. You've beaten us, but I want to fight you. and just goes straight into this fight. Lights of Caesar goes, yeah, bring it. And they have this fight. And it's actually quite exciting. It's actually a well-done fight. And the winner, let's say it's Caesar, I'm no spoilers, says, very VD Vici motherfucker, as he's standing over the beaten body of the ghoul. This is brilliant.
That's amazing.
And then at one point in it, there's a load of flying saucers fly over a load of the soldiers. And one of them says, oh, my God, this might be a sign from the gods. But his mate says, I don't know, man. They look like soup plates rather than gods. I mean, this is great.
Yeah.
This is just this sort of completely irreverent sort of story that it really works. So the Romans, who are clearly just fearless fuckers, fight back against the sorcerers. And the book takes some sort of seriously bloody turns in it and becomes like a real romp. This is like the first issue. I really enjoyed it in a sort of B-movie, underground comics-y, gory way. It's sort of fun and violent and action-packed. And
there's one sound effect. There's one sound effect. There's some amazing sort of like hand-drawn sort of sound effects in this. And there's one where lots of aliens are sort of firing down on like the Romans and stuff. And you've got like bang, kaboom, and bam. And one explosion I think happens near the Emperor. And I can't help laughing because it just says bum. I mean, if you think about it, you know, that's the noise. Do you know what I mean? If you think about that sort of noise, but just reading the word bum.
Oh, it's what you mean, yeah. And I don't know, when I first read this, I can't remember whether I saw this image or not, but the back cover is suddenly just took another turn. I thought, where is this going? This is really, I'm really liking this. And it's an image of a really crazy, sort of creepy image of one of the sort, because the aliens are like the Greys, you know, like Area 51 Greys sort of type of things. And it's got, but it's got like big fucking sharp teeth, like critters style sharp teeth. But he's wearing the clothes of the Emperor. And you think, oh, who is that? Are they indicating that, for example, Nero was an alien? Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's sort of, I'm not sure where it's going, but it does interest me. I'm really in the mood to find out where this goes. So I think it came out as a webcomic of some kind, I'm going to say. I think so. And then it's been put together. I'm not sure if there's a print version or not, but it's certainly on Comic House.
Yeah.
And if you go to www.romansversusaliens.com, how's that for a good website?
Yeah.
And you can find out more. But yeah, it's just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I read it while I was having a coffee at work. And yeah, it's all right. Yeah. It's good fun.
It's a nice sort of palate cleanser, isn't it? It's like, I love books like that. It's just sort of like, this is just going to be fun. Just switch your brain off, enjoy it. You know, that's what we need more of sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. Cool. Another bunch of great, you can read them all on Comic House. So that there, no
there
doubt,
you go.
Plays this week.
Yeah.
but we're probably doing this because we're hugely, hugely sorry to Pete for what we did. But in all seriousness, we hope you enjoyed this sort of little episode, something a little different. Let us know what you thought about it, or if we got anything wrong or anything right. Obviously, we had some opinions at the beginning, and I know probably on the Facebook page and stuff, this conversation is going to continue. But if you want to contact us, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing future guests and lineup. And we've got some really exciting up-and-comers and bigger names coming up as well. So if you go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, you can follow us there. And if you want to carry on the conversation, which I've never said before, but that's normally what people say, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of thing they say on podcasts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Professional ones, not like ours.
Ours. But if you want to carry on the conversation, then you can join the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk, which has a fantastic group of people talking about comics, making them, conventions, just the pros and cons, you know, what titles they should check out. We're very, very diligent about, like,
We've let a few Kickstarters through recently.
Yeah.
And I think we'll start stamping down on it again. But I know there was a few that could have done with a bit of help. So there's a few that have got through by all of us, I think. But
We do appreciate people asking nicely. That's all.
Yeah, we do. And if you're going to apply, or you've got friends who are going to apply to join, get them to write something.
Yeah.
Two out of three applications have got nothing written in them. You know, there's these colour questions are very simple about what comics you're enjoying and all this sort of thing. You know, if you're going to apply to join, then please just fill it out. And you'll pass straight away. I'll tell you that now.
Yeah.
But we get loads of moody ones. Do you know what I mean? We get loads of like.
And you'll be surprised, like, who's part of the group as well. Like, sometimes, you know, a voice will pipe up and I'll be like, oh my God, they're part of the group. I didn't realise that.
Yeah. Pat Mills has replied to quite a few posts. He's thought, oh, I know about this, so I'll mention something. That happens all the time. You know, there's some great people on there.
Like Chris Wildgoose. Yeah. You know,
he stepped away from
his hugely busy schedule to have a thoroughly entertaining conversation about work.
Thoughtful, definitely.
Yeah, so it's a great place to go. Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook.com. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Leave us a review and subscribe on iTunes. It helps get the word out. This year we're going to try and push it a bit more. Get because the more people that listen to this show, the more people find out about great indie comics. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, we'll stop pumping about our own comics for a while, for at least a couple of months. You may be sick of that by now. But and also, if we met you at the weekend. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you very, very much. Yeah. It's not always like this.
Yeah, it is.
But thank you for listening to us, whether it was on iTunes or Spotify or one of the networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Goose Strangling.
That probably is a network.
Probably.
And where can people find us online? Well, you can find Dan Butcher at Vanguard Comic on Twitter. Is he that on Instagram as well? I think he might be. Might be.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I do follow him, but I'm not sure.
But you should definitely check out Vanguard, vanguardcomic.com. online, because that started up again. Issue 16, I think. Oh, bloody hell!
Is it? Yeah, bloody hell.
16. He's a beast, and he's not.
And follow him on Patreon as well, because he puts out probably the sexiest videos.
Oh, the sexiest videos. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, they are great. Actually, they're really, really good videos.
When he pointed at the camera, wink. Like,
it was when he was like drawing on the clipboard that didn't have anything on that made me laugh. Yeah. Go support Dan on Patreon and stuff, because it's well worth your money, and he endeavours to really give something
value for your money. He does.
And anyone who's seen Dan's work knows that that's pretty epic. So
he's a machine.
Yeah. So even though he's in the toilet now, no, he's not.
Yeah, he's been sick.
Yeah.
Out of his knob.
Oh God. Dan, that was Tony. It wasn't me. I didn't tell him to say that. Where can people find you, Tony?
neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's a few things got up this week. The mailer, it hasn't died. Thanks to everyone who sent some nice messages. The final one went up last Wednesday, until it becomes a monthly sort of magazine format. So if you are subscribed, then keep subscribed, because there's going to be some good things coming. So have a look for that one.
Yeah. If you subscribe to the mailer, do you get access to the older ones?
No, but you can message me, and if you are subscribed, I can send you all the old ones.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so if you subscribe today, you wouldn't have got Wednesdays, but all you got to do is message me saying, can I have the last five or something, and I can press a button on the mailer to send them to you.
Yeah, there you go, and you should, because Tony's always got some thought-provoking comments, and then he spoils it with like a C-bomb, and I just think, oh, what's he done that for?
I put a C-bomb in today. You see the one that went live today? Had a good C-bomb in that one.
God bless you. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic The Red Mass from Mars at theredmassfrommars.com. And thank you for all the messages and support.
Yeah, you're all over it now, mate. On way.
I've been bitten by the bug again.
Stop staring at your cat and draw the fucking comic.
I was trying to draw the fucking layouts when the cat was there. Yes, The Red Mass from Mars has begun in earnest. I've been doing some tweaks to the script, but the layout's all good. And I must say, after a bit of a break, there was part of me thinking, am I going to be able to speak the language again? Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of...
It's been a bit of a break. Yeah.
But then as soon as I started, it was... Yeah.
I wonder whether it's going to get a bit darker because of Murder Road.
Or maybe it'll get lighter.
You're going to be tempted to do a bit... Sorry, what were you saying?
Maybe it'll get lighter.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you're in that dark area now. Maybe these are Vincent Hunt, the wilderness years.
All I know
is you're just like raging against the world.
I've looked
now that you're almost in your 40s.
Oh. Although I have looked at some of the layouts I'm doing, and I'm going to be pushing myself to do some exciting layouts.
You always got to do that, yeah.
So I'm hugely looking forward. So that's going to be exciting soon. Anyway, yeah, if you follow me on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you'll be seeing updates about that anyway. So thank you for all the support. It's going to be a fun one, because issue 4 is going to be out this year. and I'm going to kick its ass. Anyway.
And five.
Yes. Although, I'm just going to say it. I'm contemplating it, all the four issues, like 1 to 4, 24 pages of story.
Or you're going to do a double.
I might do. I'm thinking about having a bumper issue 5 to finish the story.
You love bumpers.
I love a bumper.
How fucking old are we?
I know. Well,
I'm in my 60s, I'm making bum jokes.
I know. You're a bum joke. Anyway,
yeah, I am.
Thank you very much for listening. And from the dearly departed Dan Butcher, Tony, and myself, we hope you have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. Stay positive about comics because...
Stay positive.
Yeah.
And what do you do?
Well, you've got to be the change you want to see in the world. That's what it is, isn't it?
Christ almighty. Rom-com. No,
what you got to do, Tony?
You got to stay awesome.
Leave it there. I'm actually going to finish the show with a foghorn.
I was hoping you were going to say it. I was planning to say that for like the last 10 minutes. When's you going to say it?
That's just going to be so awesome when you get stay awesome, you burr, and then it'll kick into the credits.
We need to do that, don't we? We need to get a t-shirt that says "Stay awesome, you," and then just a picture of a foghorn.
Foghorn.